Cognitive Rampage podcast. I'm your host, Adam Lowry. This is quite an exciting day for me for a few reasons. The limited edition for the Cognitive Rampage book releases today on my website, adamlowry.com or cognitiverampage.com. It has been a journey, and I feel like the new journey is just beginning with the book just now coming available. So it's a good day. So I figured another big day is someone that's really made waves, like I'm hoping the book does as well in your life and many others, that made waves in the health industry. My guest today is Naudi Aguilar from Functional Patterns. You know, it's called Functional Patterns, but I'm going to let Mr. Aguilar explain more about what that is. He's joining us live. Welcome to the show, brother. How are you?
It's actually Seattle, Washington now. So I just moved up here recently, maybe about 3-4 months. What's it been? Maybe about 4 months ago. I moved up here from the Northwest originally, and I just decided to come back home. So I'm actually now in Seattle, Washington. I opened up a facility just downstairs from my apartment, and things are going real good out here. But yeah, going into what I do, I train humans in relation to their biology. It gets kind of complicated explaining what I do, man, because it's a multi-layered kind of thing. I think once you start dealing with concepts of integration, things get a little bit complicated. So to kind of describe what I do, I go about addressing the human conditions, human problems in two ways. One is I look at their evolutionary lineage. So if I look at a person, if I look at any organism, I think, okay, where did they adapt? What was the process of their adaptation? And as we know with human beings, they've been adapting to run, walk, throw as a priority. We lift stuff too, but we run, walk, and throw. And we've been doing that for several millions of years. So therefore, there's already kind of a blueprint already set for humans with their movement. There's already a blueprint there for us. I then go on to take much more of like an engineering approach in terms of where I look at a human body's dysfunctions. I look at where a human being adapted in nature, and then I look at how they are relating to our cultural environment. And if we look at the way that the culture and our natural environment go, they don't really coincide too well. So we have to assume that there's going to be a lot of imbalances on the body. And it's not to say that human beings, even in nature, are perfect. Humans in nature also deal with imbalances. If you ever injure your ankle, or if you ever hurt your shoulder, anything like that, I mean, that would obviously create some movement deficiencies on your body, and then that would lead to imbalances too. So it's not to say that nature carves out a perfect organism. Nature does not carve out perfect organisms. Every organism is imperfect because it keeps evolving. Every organism is in a continual state of evolution, so therefore nature does not carve out perfection. So the human body is not perfect. So Functional Patterns is really just an attempt to surpass what humans have moved like before, to take the tissues that have evolved, and we maximize those tissues that we evolved to move, throw, punch. I mean, punching, I guess, isn't necessarily, probably shouldn't be so much of an evolutionary trait, but the muscles that are involved in those types of movements, we nurture those significantly. And so I always just see it from those two perspectives. I look at it from an evolutionary perspective and from kind of like a mathematical, geometrical perspective in terms of how I address the human body. So it's a little bit different than what you traditionally find. There's a lot of stuff where you deal with, where people start using terms like natural movements. I don't really align with that kind of stuff because I think, it's difficult to figure out the nature of human beings in general, because our environments are constantly changing. So therefore our adaptations are going to have to change. Our perspectives on things are going to have to change. We're not going to be able to go back into the forest. It's just not going to happen. So we have to learn how to make it in this culture. So my concern isn't necessarily that we just go back to nature. It's how do we evolve past this, how do we evolve past our, the human condition, I guess you could say.
Yeah, that's a mouthful of information. I'm going to back up to a few things. There has definitely been a lot of, negative, I don't say negative, but, you could say negative research on static movements type workouts, things where you're, like the bench press for say, you know, and its pressures on the shoulders and the rotator cuffs for its flat movement and how it compresses the back. And excuse me, in years and years of static movement like that, that are technically unnatural. You know, you don't technically stand in that static position. And you've seen that emergence of, you referred to it as the natural movement, and you want to you're separating yours through a functional pattern.
It's biomechanics. That's, I'm making it very specific. So the problem is when you look at people who in the field of natural movement, they don't take things like kyphosis or a lordosis, you know, where you have these excessive curvatures in the spine. They don't take muscle dysfunctions into the equation before actually training people. Whereas where you normally see that, you see that in physical therapy, physiotherapy, and that's usually where you get that kind of stuff. So I think I take it a step further in the sense of I get human bodies to move after we've addressed the dysfunctions of a kyphosis, a twisted thoracic spine, a laterally tilted lumbar spine, a hip hike, a knee valgus, a pronated ankle, a supinated ankle, an externally rotated tibia. It goes all along that spectrum. So in terms of being compared to natural movement enthusiasts, we're entirely different. I think we definitely take it a few more steps, mainly because we do address dysfunctions on the body before actually taking it through any kind of a crazy range of motion. We base our approach on the increase of performance. So if I get a person who's running, let's say, at 12 miles an hour, hopefully within a matter of, you know, 2-3 months, if they follow our programs, we'll be able to get them to about 14 miles an hour. You'll notice a stride length change. You'll notice that a tibia won't rotate like it did when I put it on a slow motion capture. You'll notice that the pelvis won't be going down and up like that. The thing is, what I'm doing at Functional Patterns, or what we're doing at Functional Patterns, we're trying to quantify what function even is. Whereas I think there's two worlds in the training field. You have the ambiguous world and you have the objective scientific world. I'm trying to eliminate the ambiguity from the fitness industry. I'm trying to actually codify what a human actually needs to be healthy, to be strong, to be able to deal with the anxieties of everyday life, to be able to move effectively, to deal with physical pains in the body, dealing with assortment of different neurological conditions. So my concern when it comes to the human body isn't just to get people to move. It's to get them to move in a way that's relevant. What is actually relevant? And if you look at anything in our society, if you look at anything in our culture, it's clear that symmetries are present everywhere. Of course, there's asymmetries present everywhere, but symmetrical structures last a very long time. So the building that I'm living in right now, I think it's about a 20-30 story building that I'm in right now. It's obeying the laws of, you know, physics. You know, there are natural laws that we have to adapt to. And so the thing is, with a natural movement specialist or even any movement specialist, they don't really respect physics. And people are very turned off by the fact that the human body is not we are machines. Humans are machines. You have inputs of information that come from the environment. You have associative memory that comes in with those inputs, and your brain, you know, it absorbs this data and it wires it in. It gets wired into your muscles. It gets wired into your cognition at the reptilian level. And we are just complicated organisms. We're complicated robots with, you know, probably trillions of sensors all over them because we have trillions of cells and they all feel things. So with that said, it's way more complicated than just getting people to move or, you know, doing back bends and inversions and all that. That doesn't, for me, the perception of that doesn't apply. If you got somebody with a stroke and they come to you and they can barely walk, the last thing you're going to be thinking about is how do I get them to, you know, I mean, I don't even know what the hell they do. I wouldn't have them trying to balance on a log. I'll tell you that much. I'd be having them, okay, you have to learn how to stand. You have to learn how to recruit your TBA. You have to learn how to recruit your diaphragm. You have to learn how to activate these systems at a basic level. Made these adaptations, then we can start moving on into movement. But again, it always comes back down to that whole thing where you know, I'm trying to pay respects to physics. I'm not ignoring natural law. I'm not ignoring the mechanical universe. I'm tackling it head on because if you look at engineering, it seems to have worked. Right. If you look at cars, if you look at airplanes, if you look at buildings, if you look at everything around you, engineering works magnificently. And in the field of training, it's absolutely gone. It's very frustrating to watch because it's so important. You know, we have the science of physics applied to so many things, but not the human body or not humans in general. And I think that we should do that. I think it's a grave mistake that we're not doing something like that.
Yeah, I see what you do. You take a much more microscopic look and starting with the biological base of the individual, which for me, even in mental health, is crucial. When you start with somebody's organic base and you treat the individual, not just apply some theoretical process to the psyche, that you work with the individual. And I see what you mean by, it's almost like using the word natural movement. It's like using the word natural on so-called good for you food products, right? It doesn't really mean anything.
Or let's say if you say natural, it's like, okay, is it natural for a person, if somebody's been raised in an environment and they have been raised to chop people's heads off, is that behavior natural or is that a conditioned trait? So you have to understand the word natural already is a very, very flawed thing, especially when you start trying to use the term natural to describe human behavior. It doesn't make sense.
That's why I referred it to the bullshit idea of it when they use it on advertising good for you food products by calling it natural. It's a convoluted idea. And so for the idea that you talk about starting from the biology of what the individual needs, I can very much relate to, like I said, from a therapeutic level, a mental health level, and starting with biology, how we move, all those different, you know, I even more closely identify because my daughter, who is a high performance athlete herself at 16 playing volleyball, has a slight deal with multiple sclerosis or with a make sure I'm saying it right. Yeah, a slight curvature of the spine here, but it's not
scoliosis.
Thank you, scoliosis. I said MS. I was thinking about Christina Cusack. She was just on the local news this morning. An ex tribe member that was on the show, but yes, thank you. And you know, because of that, she adjusts the way that she jumps sometimes, and you know, has lower back issues because she favors one side of another. And so that speaks directly to what you're saying. And so you would essentially then work with someone like that, understanding the function of the spine and its placement, and then work on the adjustment more customized to what the person needs.
Well, okay. So first you have to determine whether this is a functional or structural scoliosis. I mean, if there are bone deformities, things like that, there's only so much you're going to be able to do with that. But from what I've found, I have pictures. If you go to my Facebook page, if you go to a lot of, even I've put it up on videos before where I'll take a person who had a full on scoliosis and then it disappears. It's gone after a few minutes just through basic muscle activations. But
few
yeah, the
minutes.
Way.
Few minutes.
Yes. Holy I've had people, when I do a, I've had a, like I do level one courses in Europe and Australia and whatnot. And I always get people with cases of scoliosis. I always end up having that. I do master courses and whatnot. People will come with me for 7 weeks and, they'll come with the scoliosis. And I mean, the thing is, it's like, I still have to see it with an x-ray to confirm this, but you can actually feel every vertebral structure. You can feel when it's rotated, you can actually track up the spine as you're going up through it, and you can actually feel when where the curvatures are initially. And I've had the students look at this, and usually they're in awe when they see that because they're like, holy shit, you know, I didn't realize I could actually correct that so quickly. So yeah, within the first few minutes, I could retrain the patterns, retrain the muscles in a way that will eliminate that. I mean, you have to really ask yourself, what is a scoliosis? Or scoliosis is just an extreme asymmetry. I believe it's known. I'm not sure. I heard this from a very reputable source. That 2/3 of people don't have a transverse abdominis, which is like a seat belt. It's almost like it's like the belt around your core. And 2/3 of people don't have that condition, even though we evolutionarily have this muscle. You know, we have this muscle for a reason. There's certain diagnostics that I conduct in which I push people and I can test whether their TVA is working or not, their transverse abdominis, and likely what's going on with their daughter. She just probably just doesn't have a TVA recruited and it just needs to be conditioned. But all that kind of stuff, it could be, if we stop accepting what we are and we start thinking about that we are conditioned to give in a certain way, then that in and of itself can, that by itself will, you know, lead to you solving a lot of your own problems. In terms of the scoliosis, all that represents to me is when it's functional. All that really represents to me is a is a person with an extreme asymmetrical shift. It's a person with a completely dormant TVA. Of course, there's all sorts of things that can happen. There can be digestive issues. There could be, your intestines could be twisted a certain way, and that created this condition in your spine. But if you realign the muscles, it appears, at least from an external perspective, from an external view, that a person with a scoliosis, that can be corrected fairly easily if it's functional. Also, if you look at people who have a scoliosis, if you look at them from a lateral profile, from a lateral view, you usually notice a severe kyphoscoliosis. There's always a kyphoscoliosis that's always associated with some kind of a scoliosis. On almost every single circumstance that I've seen, there's always a direct correlation. So it's, again, there's a lot of solutions to problems. Again, with FP, that we're solving a lot of problems that I think a lot of people have deemed to be impossible when I've seen it done. I've probably had about 20, 30 cases of people who I've seen who've had scoliosis that are of more of a minor degree, some who are of a little bit more of a major degree, but that I was able to correct. And a lot of these people had pain, specifically in the lumbar spine. And within a matter of a few months, it's usually gone. So, yeah, it's very interesting stuff.
Yeah, it's captivating. What I like about it is that it's peeking into the future, taking, you know, what's known out there, pulling together, but then you put it to the test, you know, by going back to the biological or genetic development, folding into what the individual needs. Can you explain a little bit more when you say if it's functional, when you talk about, it doesn't have to be scoliosis or anything else, whether something is caused by being functional or is caused...
It's just pretty much if the muscles are pulling it into that place. If it's a bone deformity where, like, let's say the vertebral, the disc or the vertebra itself is just deformed, then that's one thing. But if it's functional, it just means that the muscles are pulling it into that point. So if it's a functional scoliosis, which with your diet, that's usually what it is. Most of the time it is. And even if you have a bone deformity, I mean, let me put it this way. Are babies' bones hard or are they soft?
Soft.
Yeah. So at that point, we have to ask ourselves, at what point does this really become a structural issue if the bones are soft and they're still forming through your adolescence? You know, your bones don't really begin to harden until you're probably, I think, about 3, 4, 5 years old. Something. That's when they start to harden. But even then, they're still forming into your adulthood. And they can still be changed. This is another complication. When you start fixing dysfunctions on a human body, people assume, you know, that bones are supposed to look a certain way. You start having people talking about bone morphologies without considering that your bones have marrow and there's lots of blood in there, and that bones can change relative to the stimuli that you place upon them. So if I'm a Muay Thai fighter and I kick somebody in the shins, or if I start kicking a tree, what are my bones going to do? They're going to calcify and get more dense wherever I am kicking. So bones can change relative to the type of pressure you are putting upon them. So with the scoliosis, when somebody says, oh, it could be a bone deformity, even if they do say it's a structural thing, you have to ask yourself, when does this become a structural issue? Does this become a structural issue at birth? Because at birth, your bones are still soft. So at what age can you correct this? And this is sometimes what you see chiropractors who are working with babies. Might be a good thing to have a baby see a chiropractor, especially if they have some kind of issues with their spine, because their bones are just setting in place. It might be good to have a technician like a chiropractor go in there and say, okay, let's reset things here. Boom, 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 boom. Now you start growing older and you don't end up having these types of things like scoliosis. But these are just these are several problems that are dealt with in the industry. There's a lot of dysfunctions that go on. You know, sometimes people figure, you know, some people are only meant to squat so deep, while other people are supposed to squat, really deep. But they don't ever consider, well, what are the adaptations that human being has made to the environment prior to squatting in the first place? Do they have a quadricep restriction? Do they have a hamstring restriction proximal to the gluteal fold? Do they have a hamstring weakness proximal to the knee joint? These are questions that need to be answered, and they need to be asked in the first place. They need to be contemplated before you can really come to this distinction. And so this is one of the frustrations that I've dealt with in the industry, is that you can't say things as they are. You have to take into consideration that humans are adapting to a specific set of inputs, and that if you don't take in those environmental circumstances, that you're going to get a very, very skewed image as to what the human being is supposed to be able to do. You can't say that a human is greedy or that they're naturally, violent. You have to take into consideration that we are living in an environment that nurtures greedy behavior. You're having to look into the environment that, you know, it rewards violence in some regards, right? It's like if you look at video games, again, people are violent because they're conditioned to be violent. People are greedy because they're conditioned to be greedy. You can't ignore the environment. And that's one of the fundamental problems going on even in the training industry is people assume that, you know, people are the way they are. It's like, no, there are decades of, you know, most people are suffering from some kind of a post-traumatic stress disorder. If I tell somebody, you know, there's a direct correlation between your emotions and your biomechanics, most people will be like, what? But as soon as you start putting your elbow on a certain part of somebody's leg and they start getting emotional and then they start laughing, you put your elbow on a certain portion of their thigh. This happens quite frequently. You put your elbow on there, they start laughing. Especially people who tend to be very type A personality. Put your elbow on there, they start laughing. And you'd be like, oh, okay, cool. This happened with my girlfriend. She had a knee problem, and I started putting my elbow on her quad. Crazy thing is, she was obsessed with building her quads, getting bigger quads when she worked out. And so I started working on her quads because she was having some knee problems. And there was a certain part of her quads that I was working on. She starts laughing, she's like, and she kind of pushed me away. I'd be like, no. Relax. We're good. We're going to be okay. You put your elbow on the quad again, start giggling and laughing even harder. She just starts laughing, laughing, laughing. The next thing you know, I see her putting a pillow over her face. And eventually, after about like 5 minutes, what appeared to be laughing was actually bawling. She was crying and she started having to, she had to come to the conclusion that her mother was going to die and her parents were going to die. And that it was on her mind. And by me putting my elbow on her quad, it happened to, I guess, not release. It kind of helped allow her to express that feeling. And we have to understand that if you have a human being in nature and they're running around in nature, and you know, anytime they've gone through a stressor, anytime they've gone through a problem, they'd either scream, throw something, or they would move. What do we do in our culture? We stay still while we deal with most of our traumas. We're driving, we're thinking about things, and we're just sitting still. We never express our frustrations through any kind of a physical movement. So therefore, your body says, okay, we're going to isometrically activate muscles to hold on to these emotions. So people would assume that, you know what, like some people will talk about it with the chakras and whatnot. This has nothing to do with the chakras. This has everything to do with associative memory. That if you have a place that you like to put your tension on, as that's your protective mechanism, your protective barrier, you're going to tend to hold on to that. If I drop my elbow on that barrier, or if I activate muscles in a way that deactivate that tissue in a certain way, then guess what's going to happen? You're going to have some kind of an emotional release that comes from that. And it happens all the time. I've had this happen well over 100 times in my career. So it's not a mystery. It's the human brain and the body are completely tied in together. Again, when I talk about, you know, the body being a complicated, it's a machine with complicated sensors and associative memory. That's fact. This is not pseudoscience. This is a fact. And this is hard science, right? This goes all the way back to Pavlov. So we have to take into consideration that at one point or the other, you're going to have to come to the conclusion that human beings are adapted to a certain set of circumstances. And if you don't take those circumstances into place, you're going to get a very skewed result. So when we look at the science of physical human movement, if we look at the science of rehabilitation, they're not taking in the environment into the equation. There's several studies that say that posture doesn't change pain responses, where my anecdotal evidence and my clinical evidence, it says the exact opposite. I ask, are you even addressing those postural distortions, or are you just working around a compensated structure? Are you telling somebody to just pin their shoulders back without considering femoral positioning, tibial positioning, foot positioning, whether the TBA is active, whether this person is instituting intra-abdominal pressure or not? I mean, these are so many factors that need to be instituted. But the common theme out of the scientific establishment, or even the non-scientific, the pseudoscientists who are into the natural movement, is that they're not taking so much the specific adaptations that people are making into this culture and where they actually came from. What was the way that we would have expressed ourselves in nature? Would it have been through doing some kind of a backbend, or would it have been by running? Would it have been by throwing a punch at somebody? How would we have reacted? So there's a lot of interesting stuff that comes along with this, man. And you probably want to ask me some other stuff.
No, man, please. For me, it's gaining perceptions and competence and listening, man. That for me is the fun part. You spoke about a lot of things there. A lot of things that I write about as well. Excuse me. approach even to mental health. It's weird. I'm drawing these parallels. We can't, no one, I don't think, can argue the fact that the environment is influential in our development mentally. And obviously you're talking about it physically, even over time. I mean, epigenetics is speaking to that, evolvement about almost being more powerful than our DNA and our genetic evolvement, that if we manipulate the environment. And it also speaks to why I would also say that a lot of mental health tactics, approaches from rehabs to diets to whatever, to physical training, all of that, no matter the success rate, I would say a lot of that is pinned on exactly what you're talking about, is pinned on the environment when they leave the gym, when they leave the trainer, when you leave the therapist, when you leave the good relationship with their friends. That's where the environment then begins to take over. And I mean, I even write in my book.
But
that,
even,
go ahead.
You may make the assumption that even if they go to a psychologist, or if they go to a trainer, or if they go to a physical therapist, what you have here is a value system disorder. And that this isn't necessarily when the practitioners themselves are incapable of seeing that there's something wrong with the environment. And let's say you go to a gym and the person has to do a bunch of sit-ups, squats, and whatnot. If you leave the gym and you go into the environment, those sit-ups and squats are an extension of the environment. The people that develop these systems, they never were asking themselves, okay, well, am I doing something that's counterculture? Because that's probably what I should be doing. I shouldn't be doing something that feeds into our culture. If, let's say, for instance, you have a person who's doing a squat or a deadlift in their training, or a pull-up, we have to realize that's a linear way of training, right? When you're sitting at a desk, what are you doing? You're sitting in a linear reality. You're looking at a desk, you're typing, you're working at the sagittal plane of motion. So with that said, if your training doesn't even move outside of the sagittal plane, then at that point you're taking, if your reality, we adapted to move in a three-dimensional reality, but then if you're taking a linear approach to training, you're just feeding into the cultural indoctrination that you're putting upon people. So it's a hard thing to tell people, because most of the time what I have to deal with functional patterns is like, look, you're feeding into an anti-establishment concept when you buy into functional patterns, because your value systems have to change. If no matter how much I try and get somebody to recruit their TVA and open their ribs and activate their sling systems and whatnot, if that person has a vanity disorder, where they have a social vanity disorder, where they think I need to look a certain way, and it's not to say that you can't gain aesthetics. I can get people to look very, very good. I can make that happen. But the whole thing is, people get so caught up on vanity that it distorts every other facet of their reality. And I think what people don't realize is that they are a product of marketing, that the influence of marketing on their psychology and is directly correlating to their body itself, their image of self and everything like that. And so when people go to these therapists, when people go to trainers, they have to begin to ask themselves, is this person feeding off of the establishment, or are they going against the establishment? Because if you use establishment thought processes to solve your issues, you're going to go down the route that every other established entity does out there. And I mean, although it does work, if somebody breaks a bone and you go to a surgeon, hey man, that stuff works amazingly. But if you're dealing with an issue of depression and your rectus abdominis is drawing down your rib cage at all times, and every time somebody stresses you, you could deal with the stressor in life, you're always sending that neurological tension to your upper abdominals over and over again. I'm sorry, you could take all the pills that you want, you can go to see all the psychologists you want, but it's going to be very difficult to overcome that. People even talk about diet. If you change your diet, you can't train your way out of a bad diet. I've said it before, I'll say it again, I disagree with that. Why is it that you're craving crappy food in the first place? What's your value system based around? I need to look a certain way. I need to accomplish certain things. That creates a stress pattern. That stress pattern then sends you to go consume different types of food. So different types of food that are not beneficial for you. So the last thing I tell people when I train them, if they're overweight, the last thing I ever tell them to do is go on a diet. I say, eat whatever you want. Eat whatever you want. I don't eat what you're eating already. I don't need to tell you to change your freaking diet, because I understand that if I change their stress associations, if I help undo the post-traumatic stress disorder that they are in right now, within time, their body's when that moment comes that they're doing an exercise and their belly's still hanging out, and I'm like, dude, you see how you can't try in your TVA? You see how you can't retract your abdomen and open your ribs? They'll be like, yeah, I feel like I can't do that. Yeah, that's that brick that you have in your intestinal tract from eating all those fucking grains you're putting into your body. That's your issue. They then quickly understand, okay, This is why I have to stop eating grains. Oh, and guess what they start doing? Without me having to pressure them, be like, were you on your diet? Were you? I didn't have to do anything like that. Guess what the person does under their own volition? They go off, they stop eating grains within time on their own. And what do you do? They start dropping body fat. So my perception on training people and working with people is don't tell them what to do. Change the environment, modify the conditions in the environment. First and foremost, identify their environment and ask yourself, is that environment toxic? Yes, it is. So therefore, what do we have to do to counteract that? And the complexity comes down to this, man. It's clear that the wealth gap is increasing in our culture, and that poor people and that the middle class is disappearing. So therefore, they're having to work more hours to make money is what they were doing before. The statistics seem to be pointing in that direction. So therefore, our modern society is meaning that we're having to work more. If you take time off of work, then guess what happens? You don't survive anymore. You don't make money anymore. So therefore, you're screwed. So if I tell them, well, you know what? You need to get out of work at 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock. You have to get off of work every day. You need to drink this amount of water and blah, 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 blah. If I set up this whole thing while they're living in this fucking madhouse, it's not going to work. What I do with functional patterns is I say, you know what? Is what I'm doing so traumatic? Because really what I do with functional patterns is I institute trauma, extreme trauma. When I put my elbow on your thigh, it's not that it hurts in a way that you would imagine, it burns. It's this dull, achy sensation that's going on, and then it triggers an emotional reaction. I'm not trying to trigger, because I go deep. I go down to the bone when I do some. People talk about deep tissue massage. I'm not working within that perspective. I just here's your pain. Here's your real pain. This is your ego pain. Let's go straight to that. When I induce something like that with my elbow, or I have somebody do a corrective exercise or a movement, I'm addressing some internal issues, some internal problems, and that in and of itself creates the physiological change. That induction of extreme trauma changes the way that they perceive their reality. When you change the way that a person can perceive their reality, when they're not so stressed out, when they're not so stuck on their limbic brain, when they're not so, what are other people thinking about me? That opens the gateway for them to actually address their own issues, whether that's a hormonal thing, whether that's a dietary thing, whether that's, what kind of car should I buy, right? It's no secret that people who hang out with me long enough stop thinking about what are other people thinking about me. But how many people want to do that? That's the question. How many people don't want to buy into the American dream? Everybody wants to buy into that. And if you buy into FP, you're bound to come down that rabbit hole. You're eventually going to have to ask yourself, why do I want this fucking six pack? Why do I want these huge pecs? Why do I want this big old ass? Oh, because marketing told me that. Why is that even a concern of mine? Shouldn't my concern be to live to 150 years old? Because at the end of the day, it's encoded in a biological organism. If you look at bacteria, what are its motives for existence? What are its mechanisms? One is to survive. The other is to duplicate. If something is not helping you survive, then it should be counterintuitive. But yet you see people doing counterintuitive things all the time that fucking kill themselves. When I was in my 20s, I didn't do drugs. I didn't drink alcohol. I didn't do anything, and I was ridiculed, especially in my younger 20s when I didn't do that. But for me, I was like, why am I going to kill myself? Just to fit in with you? Is that really what I'm here to do? Just to fit in with you, I'm gonna do these drugs. What's the purpose of this? It's counterintuitive, because I kind of always had that logic in my mind where it's like, would a bacteria want to just kill itself to fit in with another bacteria? Would it want to do that? I don't operate under that condition. And so I think that's where it starts going into human behavior, and we have to start talking about, okay, that we're tribal and things like that. We could probably go into that later in this interview.
Man, I love watching you go, man. I swear, it's like you already got a copy of my book today, man. We speak on the same levels, man. It's yep. When you talk about the values that people have to find, I speak to them as called concrete beliefs. What you believe creates what you think creates what you feel. Generally, what you feel perpetuates behavior, and environment can influence all of those. And what you talk about is most people, I use an example a lot, according to food, right? Most people don't really know what they believe about food, exercise, the world, themselves, right? If you ask them that directly. So we operate based on these set core beliefs, these values you spoke about that we have in our heart or our mind, whatever you want to call it. Really, I would say our mind, but we operate on those concrete beliefs, moving on certain thoughts that are perpetuating feelings we think we should have. And when we move on those realities. I love how you mentioned creating realities, because there is no reality. We create that through our perceptions. And so once you learn that you have control of your perception and your belief change, I love how you don't force the issue of health or any of that, because you're right. Because unless people are willing to change what they believe, what they value about themselves, the world, others, food, exercise, whatever that means, then nothing is sustainable for time. Just because you know you have to do something doesn't mean it can last. The way you make it last is get off the knowledge helps, because, I mean, competence leads to confidence. That builds an enthusiasm. But what you believe matters most. So, you know, I talk about food. A lot of people that I work with, I'll say, so what do you believe about food? What do you mean? What do you really believe? And so, well, I know I should eat healthy. I said, I didn't ask you, what do you know? Not what do you think or what have you been taught or what you read. What do you believe? And when you get beneath the belief, a lot of times what I hear is, well, food should taste good and I should be able to have whatever I want. Okay. Now we got your real belief about food, and we try to curb that to, you know, food is fuel, food is fuel. So if you can change a concrete belief on repetitive motions, repetitive behavior, that helps shift the belief. People always ask, well, how do you change what you believe? You change what you believe through experience and gain of competence. So when you get competence, you push yourself through the experience. That is how you build that enthusiasm and knowledge to change it. Yeah, I mean, dude, we're on the same page. I love how you kind of mastered the body version of mastering the functional patterns and connections of the body. I kind of went toward the functional patterns of the mind, and we both mix it with behavior to change anything.
Well, the influence comes from the same place, man. For me, from about the age of 19 on, I started studying a little bit more into psychology. At about the age of 22, 23, I don't know, how old was I? Maybe about 24 or 25, I watched a documentary called Zeitgeist. And that documentary, I watched the first Zeitgeist that was kind of more conspiracy theory-esque or whatever, and I agree with 99% of what was in that documentary. I think it's irrefutable, historical, and I think logically speaking, if you disagree with it, you're a status quo sheep. But the second documentary was one that was very revealing to me, not just in terms of where they just brought up how money actually works and how money is a subjective, you know, concept, in terms of how we've organized it. But even more so when you start looking at the end of that documentary, it started describing human behavior. It started discussing what are the origins of human behavior, what really drives people at the end of the day. And it has less to do with some spiritual thing or that people are even making decisions. It all deals with the environment. And the thing is that we're living in a monetary system. And if you're operating from a monetary paradigm, you're going to be dealing with generally people who are living dishonest lives, because money seems to, like, it corrupts things substantially and everything. It forms biases. And if you form biases on anything, then you start getting human opinions into the equation. And so for me, at about the age of 21, 22, I really started getting into studying like B.F. Skinner and people along those lines and trying to understand what they were actually talking about. And then I said, well, you know what? There's no separation between the brain and the body, because, you know, everything that comes from the brain goes straight into the body. There is no separation. So therefore, there must be a correlation. I mean,
Hey, man, I had a guest on yesterday. We aired the podcast, but she was on Tuesday, Dr. Rahaya Maroon. And she's been a TED speaker, Rollins College instructor. She's a social scientist. And we went for 3 hours on the podcast, and she adamantly basically said the same thing. She said that, you know, what is your body and brain? Your brain is your body. It's the same. She talks about it being connected and using our body to sense the world, to sense each other, and move to a higher elevation.
I actually did a shrooms maybe about 7-8 months ago. And this is coming from somebody who never did any types of I don't call drugs drugs anymore. I call them frequency modifiers. They just go whoop, and so you just your satellite just tunes into another frequency. That's all it is. And so
Dr. Carl Hart convert there.
I don't even know, but yeah, that's my interpretation of it, is that the body is actually much smarter than it is than the brain. It actually knows a lot more than the brain does.
Interesting.
And so for me, I operate under that condition with my own body. What's allowed me to make the discoveries that I have is for me to shut my brain up, my forebrain, and allow my reptilian brain to kind of take over and just say, okay, how does this feel? what is this? What is this sensation that I'm feeling right now? It's a very intuitive thing. Science kind of guides me in terms of where I'm going when I do what I do, because it's so different. But it's an intuitive, it's a feeling based sensation that I get from it. When I did the shrooms, I understood that to a much higher degree. I understood, you know, okay, that, you know, this, I have lots of sensors in my body that, you know, most people would just assume, you know, we have five senses is from the movie, but we have five senses. And no, there's way more, there are a lot more senses of that. And I think Eastern medicine kind of goes into that kind of stuff. And they talked about that we have like 12 different pulses and whatnot. And I tend to agree with that. And I think people in general are completely disconnected with that. But when I look at society around me, even when it comes to the nutritional aspects, I think this is a problem that people don't I don't think it's possible for them to understand. A man named Wim Hof, who's been very influential on me like the last few months, I've been employing his breathing practice and his cold immersion techniques. And he has a quote where he says, "Feeling is understanding." And I don't think you can understand what your diet is supposed to be like until you actually learn what it's like to not be in a constantly inflammatory state. So when I look at people around me, I look at people that are like this all day long, just in this post-traumatic stress disorder. Okay, I'm tired. I need coffee. Oh, I'm tired. I need bread or something. Okay, spike me up. And so you see people that are just riding this wavelength that just doesn't appear to be working that well. So if you talk to a person that way and be like, okay, what's a healthy diet? They're like, what I read in books. You shouldn't read from a book what your diet should be like. You should find out how to address your stressors, how to address your stress response. Once your body finds out what a somewhat balanced circadian rhythm is, it's going to ask what kind of food that you need on anyway. It doesn't really even matter. Like if I let's say look at my own father, for instance. He's 72 and the guy is very, very healthy and he eats sugar every day. He eats snacks, eats Tootsie Rolls and all this crap. And the guy is healthier than shit. But the difference between my dad and most people is that he's the most mellow person that you'd ever meet in your entire life. Always cracking jokes. He's always really, really happy about everything. And so in regards to that, you know, he doesn't deal with any he doesn't deal with the health issues that a lot of people in general would. Whereas his brother, I believe he died at around like 53, 54 years old of cancer. But the difference between him and his brother was that his brother had a very cynical outlook on humans. He had a very cynical outlook on everything. And I'm guilty of this because part of my family is the way that I am. I'm a very cynical person. I've just learned to be okay with it. But my uncle didn't learn to be okay with it. And what wound up happening? He got cancer and he died. And these are two people from the same family. It's not like, okay, you would say, okay, one thing is hereditary. But, you know, I went to his funeral. I think it was about 15 years ago. So in that regard, what does it tell you, right? It's
environmental influence. You're talking about
environment. It always comes back to the environment. And when it comes to people training the body.
Well, you also talked about, the number one killer, the secret killer is stress. I mean, this country, the way it's designed, the way it's pushed down, you spoke about it from, you know, I wrote a paper back in the day, marketing was the attack to the human psyche. Once that started, we questioned everything of what's supposed to be. We started shaping different ideas and perceptions that were distorted and different principles. And I mean, it changes the belief. And once those beliefs start changing, the expectations start changing. I mean, you're and that stress, I mean, the number one killer in this country is stress. That's, you could call it cardiac arrest. You could call it diabetes. You could call it obesity. You could call it smoking, whatever. I mean, that killer is a symptom. It's coming. It's a symptomatic. You know, when people talk about addiction, and I get pretty upset about with addiction when I go, look, if you're treating addiction, you're treating the symptom. You know, it's deeper than that. So the symptom itself, if you keep treating your sore throat and you have the flu, you still have the flu. So you can keep treating those symptoms any which way you can. It's about getting to the root and exercise and nutrition.
Why are you in the first place, right?
Yeah, exercise and nutrition are no different, but they're not the magical key. Neither is just cognitive ability. It's all of it. It's an integrative, dynamic approach, just like our bodies are, of environmental change, cognitive change, a biological change, and an individual customization and avoiding stress, man. You know, this... one example I like to talk about when I talk about stress is I tell people to imagine your favorite car. You just got your all-time dream car. It's painted your favorite color. It's beautiful. It's sitting out there for you. And I hand you a hammer. Now, you're living your life walking around the car. Every time you feel stress or anger and you let that take a hold and grow through you, hit your car with a hammer. What would your car look like after one day? You know, so that's how infected.
That's the complication that we have to deal with in the sense of this is my perception of it. It's not that you avoid stressors. You learn to respond to stressors in a different fashion. Does that stressor stimulate ACTH or glucocorticoids? Does that stressor? Because let's say I learned this from training fighters. I work with MMA fighters, and you realize that you could have two organisms dealing with the exact same stress response of having to go in there and spar, but they both respond entirely differently. Some respond well, some respond not so well. Most people, when they get into a fight, they don't respond very well. They flinch, they're kind of like jittery, they don't know how to take a punch. So it's the exact same stressor. The only difference is, you know, how is the person taking it? If I have a fighter and they shrug every time that they're going to take a punch, that's not going to be a very good behavior if they shrug, because all they're learning is just to take a punch rather than give it right back. The last thing you want to do if you're a fighter is shrug up and close up if somebody's going to punch you. You want to open up and throw a punch immediately back. That's generally biomechanically what you're going to want to do. That's what great fighters do. They don't shrug and tighten up. They open up and say, okay, I'm going to rotate my T-spine and I'm going to throw something right back and make you think about that again. So I think a big problem is it's not necessarily just about avoiding stressors. It's about changing your reaction to the stress response. And then eventually, within time, as you change, as your life changes, it gives you the capacity to choose what kind of a lifestyle you want to live. Because what I've found is that you got to find the right people to associate with in life. We're tribal. I think we have to find people to talk to. I think everybody operates under that condition. And I think a big problem with people today is that it's hard to find good friendships that are actually based upon real substance. I think that's a big issue, and that's part of this human psychological condition, is that if we get together, it's always for, let's say somebody's, we're going to go out and get a beer together, something destructive, or we're going to drink wine together, or we're going to go eat some shit together at some restaurant. It's never actually coming together for an actual purpose that actually counts. And I think that's a huge contributor of the stress responses that we have. You know, in nature, what do you do? Why do you guys get together in nature? To survive. That's why you get together in nature. That's why you're there. You're there to beat the shit out of the elephants and the lions, because you understand we are here together to build something. Whereas what I found in our common culture today is that people get together not to build. They usually get together to destroy themselves. And it's very difficult to find good friendships in this culture. It's very difficult to find good people. I've been fortunate enough through functional patterns. I got fucking amazing people around me every single day. I've been lucky enough to attract them. But I think, especially if you carry some kind of an anti-establishment mindset where you're like, you know what, I don't believe in the way that culture works. I'm counter to the way the culture works. It's very difficult to find the right kinds of people. And in and of itself, that because you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. If you buy into the culture and you become adjusted into our society, now you are going to be taking pills. You're going to be following the pyramid diet, which is bullshit. You're going to be stressing about trivial bullshit. You're going to be focused on accomplishment. If you become a part of the establishment, yes, you're going to make yourself more tranquil and then become adjusted with everybody else. But then you destroy your physiology by partaking in all the bullshit that they do, which is, you know, following the American dream, which is destructive. But then if you take the opposite route, which I've had to take, where you're like, no, I don't want to feed into that shit. You're then ridiculed and ostracized because you take that route, and then that creates another stress association.
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. The ridicule comes, usually people become offensive or defensive when their values are attacked. We all do it, you know, when something that we believe or have lived to a certain point becomes attacked. That cognitive dissonance jumps up, we shut it down, we have to be offensive, defensive, right? It devalues us, right? And so a lot of that attack comes that way. Now, I'm backing up. You said a lot of things too, which is I agree with, is it's not about, a lot of people think they can eliminate the problems, et cetera. That would be irrational. The idea is managing those problems and getting those issues in your life to a manageable situation, not the irrational notion of eliminating all of your problems or eliminating all of your pain, even, or physical pain. These irrational beliefs, again, you know, bro, we're back to the belief of it. the belief that you should live without physical pain 100% of the time, or the belief of, you know, the world is fair, should be fair. These are the things almost preached in. And you also talked about, you know, the system does reward you. I mean, that's the system in play. So if you play the system, you will reap the rewards that it sells you. Possible travel once a year, a steady paycheck, right? Your weekends, hopefully, but now the working man and woman are getting pushed to 60 hours a week on average now for less money.
How about that concept of where people talk about, you know, taking a 2-week vacation or something like that? How many people need a 2-year vacation?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, your life can become that. And your talk about snapping out of, I call it waking up. On the website, we have a list of documentaries that I call waking up documentaries. And I dare anybody to see if they can watch all of those in a row without breaking their television or starting a riot or at least buying a Guy Fawkes mask. You know, that notion of waking up is what you talk about and what I write about, even is looking inward to the self-revelation and uncovering what we really believe about things in life. And when we can unroot those and include the biological level and the all-powerful environmental level, when we can make changes cognitively, environmentally, and behaviorally, we can manage just about anything we find that we go through in life and find a way to get through that stress. And what you have done is really taken all of those sciences, put them into a practice, then needle-nosed and focused and dug deep down into the mechanics of how the behavior functioning or the body movement functioning role plays into all of those dynamic ideas that help influence our now.
Yep. Well, that's the whole thing is that if you're not changing your – people assume that there's a difference between a cognitive association and a physical association. I could, if somebody walks into my facility, I can tell how they're going to react to a stressor based upon how they react to things biomechanically. I can tell for the most part, I can tell a lot about a person's personality just from looking at their mechanics alone. Just by if I have them do a transverse twist, for instance, I'm like, okay, this is a type A personality, or this other person would be like, okay, that's a type B. And I mean that's obviously feeding into a stereotype of personalities, and it may not have a complete relevance. But what I think about is some people have a problem with control and they try and deal with everything with aggression. And some people try doing it with everything. You can see it in their movement. You see a person's personality, you know, manifest into their movement. And I think there's specifics. There's some very, very specific details that I think no other practice is really taking out there to address there. And it's I think that the difficulty lies in this, man. This is a challenge that I have to face with in terms of functional patterns, is that after I did the shrooms, I realized that the ego is directly tied into the body. That's where the ego actually is most of the time, because your body is wired, is made a bunch of associations into the body. So when I have somebody do a transverse twist and they walk across my gym, some of the body language you get from people when they look inside the gym and then walk by, you're just like, and it's not that I'm having anybody do anything fancy or if you look into my gym, it looks like we're doing almost nothing, but it's almost like their body knows if you go in there, you're going to get opened up in a way that's not going to be, it's not going to be complimentary. We're not talking about doing some split stretches or, you know, some back bends or yoga. That doesn't really, as far as I'm concerned, we have to think in terms of layers, right? So we have, you know, you ever hear of the term fascia?
Yeah.
It's like that. So fascia, it's where the muscle is encased. It's almost like if you have a hot dog, it's the wrap that's around the hot dog, right? That's, or the kielbasa or whatever. It's the wrap around that. So there's layers to fascia. If you do something like yoga, for instance, yoga just stretches the superficial layers of fascia. So let's say if you have a hot dog, think about it, that you have a big hot dog like this, and you have 10 hot dogs within that huge hot dog, right? And there's just layers of fascia on each one of them. When you do yoga, that's not really revealing too much. All you're doing is stretching around a very, very dry hot dog on the inside, right? When you do functional patterns, you're taking that dry hot dog and you're moistening that thing up, and you're opening up everything from the inside. So then the superficial layers of fascia, the superficial hot dogs, will also be moist and they'll be receptive to one another. What I've found is when I drop that elbow in, I'm just getting to that dry hot dog and I'm releasing it. I think people understand that when you deal with it, again, when you work with enough people, when you do enough seminars, you begin to talk about things like behavior. You get somebody to activate muscles in a certain way. And in class, you start seeing them You start seeing them getting a little bit herky jerky. Why? Because you're challenging an insecurity. And it's not that I'm even communicating anything in a way that's even testing their insecurities, because for the most part, people don't generally seem to understand what I'm talking about most of the time when I'm in my courses. They don't fully grasp it because it's so new in the training field. So you get to see these reactions without me actually instituting a new belief quite yet. Their body is just going through something and it feels these changes. And so the challenge that I face the most with functional patterns is that we institute so much change that you're bound to deal with an insecurity, because your insecurities are locked into your body. Your ego is locked into your body more than it is into your brain, because your movement in nature is what determines your survival or not. So your body it comes into huge play when it comes to your behavior, your emotions, your psychology, obviously the movement, but it's a very complicated thing, because when you tell somebody, you know, that kyphosis that you have is one of the biggest problems that you'll have emotionally. Most people will be like, whatever. But then when you get people that actually walk into the doors and they go through the process, they're like, holy, you know, you'll see them bawling up. You'll see them crying like freaking crazy. It's very, very real. This is some very real stuff. And I just, that's the challenge that I face. That's the challenge that I think anybody in functional patterns faces, is that there's something possible. There's a reality. When we're at FP, we're tuned into the satellite that nobody understands until they go through it, until they feel it. And they're like, okay, now he's a very controversial figure in the fitness industry. You know, he says a lot about a lot of different practices. He's anti-deadlifts. He's anti-yoga. He's anti so many things. And it's not that I'm anti any of those things. I'm anti about 95% of what they do. And I pick about the 5% that actually works. When I actually look at somebody's gait cycle, when I see them walking, I actually see their movement change. When I look at a person's spine, I take what actually works out of the practice. But most people, they'll kind of say, you know, now he's a very cynical person, he's negative, things like that. But it's not till they actually step into the reality of functional patterns that they're like, well, they feel it. They understand it. Their satellite becomes tuned. They're like,
well, what you're talking about is the experience. You know, I talk about levels, right? We go through, we have an interest in something that leads to, hopefully we want to gain competence about it, that leads to confidence and enthusiasm. Well, if people lack competence in something or whatever it is, that means they also probably lack an experience. They haven't lived it, like you said, walk through the doors, etc. And so we can't associate with it. We can't attach our beliefs to it at that time until we experience it. And a lot of what you talk about makes sense, because look, I say that we can battle. Look, if our feelings or our emotions or how we like to move on, we can change our feelings by changing what we think, but also we can change our behavior to battle how we feel as well. You know, making those movements, making those changes, I can see why it becomes difficult for you to explain this in a short 6 minutes like this media world has become. Because you start from a biological individual perspective, because you have to see what exists before you know what to adjust. And I can see why it may look like you say, or says somebody may say, that you disagree with, say, yoga or this or that. But what you're really saying is these are umbrella approaches that people are saying can work for anybody and everybody with the same effectiveness. And what you're saying is no, that we have to get to the individual and then pull what could be good from yoga, what could be good from this for this individual, and create that to make changes.
Well, okay, so what you're saying is partially right. I think there is a way, an umbrella approach that you can take to everything. Okay. But to believe that something like yoga, which has been done the same way for the most part for the last whatever a few thousand years, is going to somehow resolve that, when they've never taken into consideration that human beings have certain characteristics in their movement, when they've never actually had slow motion capture to actually see what's going on with the body to find out what's wrong with them, I think it can be codified, and that's what I'm working on. We're actually getting very close to doing this, and I'm going to be posting results here in the next few months where people are going to flip their fucking lid. They're going to see somebody running and going, wow, that's a pretty ugly gait cycle. And you're going to see them running at a certain speed before their knee says, I can't do this anymore. Then you'll see them running 5-10 miles an hour faster than what they were before without pain. And they're going to be like, you're going to see like an entirely different human being. So there's no question that this can be codified, but I don't think anybody's really been asking, how do we codify this? My question comes down to this. Is the scientific establishment in relation to the human body even scientific? If we start talking about things like health, and especially in the field of movement, if we start talking about like exercise, things along those lines, how much of that actually is following a scientific thought process? This is the common approach that most fitness leaders take. What they do is they take they figure out a few things. They make some new creations. After they make these creations, what I tend to find is that they bundle them up into a system. They systemize it, then they sell it, and then it becomes a stagnated structure that doesn't keep evolving. What I was teaching people 6 months ago is much different than what I'm teaching them now. It's more evolved. It's like I'm skipping a lot more steps than what I used to take just 6 months ago. And I always have about a revolution every 6 months. It always changes because at FP, we're actually employing the scientific thought process into training. I don't think anybody in the fitness industry is doing that. If somebody's telling you, yeah, you know, I'm doing a hip thruster and we've developed all these scientific conclusions about gluteal activity because of this, you're only studying the same movement. Eventually you have to move on and ask yourself, are the associations that you're making in that exercise actually transferring into your everyday life? So let's say if you do a deadlift, for instance. A deadlift is a sagittal plane movement. It's a linear movement where you're going to lift something really, really heavy. Your glutes are working at the same time. So if you can imagine your legs are doing this, right? Your femurs are doing this concept of extension. But when you move and you run, your arms and your legs are actually doing this. It's an oscillating pattern. So therefore, as I do this with my right finger, let's say that's activating the hip flexors. As I do this over here, that's activating my hip extensors. That's activating my glutes. So if you got to think about, if I'm doing that lift, if I'm going to lift a specific weight, you have to ask, does this really have transference? If your glutes are working concentrically at the same time, if they're activating at the same time and your hip at the same time, that doesn't apply to most of the movements that you're doing in reality. And from what I've seen is nobody in the industry is really asking this. They just develop a set of protocols. They say, you know what, I'm hoping that this is going to work and that's going to be the case. They never test it. So for me, I have lots of before and afters of people with neurological conditions, you know, who were walking and they were not able to walk so well. Now they're able to walk very well. I have videos of people's gait cycles clearly being modified within the matter of just a couple sessions. You can see these changes actually happening. And so what I question out of the fitness establishment, out of the physical therapy community, is if you say that what you do is research based. Let's say I have my cell phone here, right? I'm going to conduct a scientific experiment right now. I'm going to take this cell phone. I'm going to throw it up, and I'm going to expect that it's going to fall. This is my experiment, and we're going to verify the theory that gravity actually exists and that it works in this particular way. So I'm going to throw it up. It fell down, right? Now, if you're training a human body and your practice only works for, you know, maybe half the population and the other half gets injured doing your craft, which happens in yoga all the time, which happens with people who do Olympic lifting, there's people that have to fall out. We have to ask ourselves, is what you're doing scientific? If it's not working for 100% of the population, is it good enough? I will honestly say that FP is probably for 100% of the population physically, but is it for 100% of the population cognitively? No. Most people don't want to deal with the denial that their posture sucks. Most people don't want to deal with the relinquishing of that tension on their upper abdominals or in the deep psoas. They don't want to deal with those problems because it surfaces problems within themselves. So when I tell people, yes, functional patterns is for everybody, but it's not for everybody. You right. See what I mean? Like,
I know what you're saying. And scientific definitely doesn't have to speak. I think you corrected yourself, but definitely it doesn't have to speak to 100%. But I know what you mean is what you're looking for are the results of long term in something other than a materialistic looking, other than say, this is what definitely. You look like. Is it a long term sustainable practice? And I do like what you mentioned, man, on how people package to programs. I mean, it's a $1 trillion industry that's coming from a mental health side, a life coaching side, a personal training side of those packages. And, you know, our society, if you will, does have a very negative connotation for what they call flip floppers, right? And for me, I think that approach is unnecessary because if we're an evolving human, if we're an evolving species, environmentally evolving, technologically evolving, cognitively evolving, if we're evolving, then we should, I mean, I hate saying should, I mean, it's a determinant word, but it seems as if we have to be open to an evolving pattern of mental health, physical health, and nutritional health as we evolve over time, rather to say, this is the way I eat because we could package it, market it, and sell it. Now, I'm going to lose fans for saying that too, but it seems as if, yes, this pattern may work for you for a period of time, but it may not be the most optimal, you know? So, exactly. I mean, I can see, man, what you've done is, I love your logo. It fits perfect how you laid out the evolution of man, and I can see to where it's almost a natural, organic chiropractic, like you said, meets physical therapy, meets individualized training, to where if I could look at a speed trainer who trains people how to run, you know, the 40 or something, they're going to slow you down. They're going to look at your knee raises, how your arm rotates, you know, everything, how you rise, adjust that and tweak it to where, boom, you got the speed. What you're doing is saying, how are you operating within your environment that's causing this dysfunctional pattern to manifest as possible multiple different symptoms that are coming from somewhere else? Go ahead.
Yeah, what it comes down to, man, is why is the humerus rotating that way? Why are you not pronating your wrist at that point? Why are you not, right? Why are you not involving that pattern in your hand? What's the mechanism inhibiting you from doing that without having to think about it? So like if you go to a running coach, yeah, they'll tell you need to cognitively do this. But bro, when you're running, you have to understand you're in maximum fight or flight if you're in a sprint. You can't make that many adjustments with your body. And you have to think, if I tell my humerus to do this, or if I tell my femur to do this, or my tibia to do that on one thing, you have to realize if I don't associate that one cue in my body, that could then transfer it to an entirely different kinetic change in the body. My body's just going to compensate around that one thing. This is why when most people look at the before and afters that I have of people, when I show their posture, people are like, the fuck did you do that? Because I know people have tried doing this because they're only looking at one singular variable. So like when people think, okay, a person's got a kyphosis or they got a hunchback, right? The kyphosis around the thoracic spine. They're like, okay, I'm going to try and get them to bend back. But as soon as you bend them back, what ends up happening? Their lumbar spine hyperextends and their pelvis drifts even further forward. So it's like your body just compensates in another fashion because you didn't address the actual integrated problem going on. So when I get somebody to stand, let's say the first time, that's when I'm telling you, it's like you're taking the salad challenge, you're going do 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 do. They get to that and they're like, oh shit. And ever since from that point, people make two choices. They either withdraw or they stay around and they get super hyped up about this because they're like, oh my God, you finally found this fucking answer where it's like, okay, this is where I need to tune my satellite. And as long as I tune to this satellite as I'm moving, that's when everything's going to change. But I want to get into the whole concept of aesthetics in terms of a vanity. I think people should be judging themselves on the way that they look, but there's a certain thing that they should judge. Like the first date that I had with my girlfriend, I've been with her for about 3 years now. The first date that I had, at that point I arrived at how to pick a woman for myself. This is how I did it. So we have our first date and then I push her from the side. I push her kind of hard and I see how she reacts. I go, whack. I just clack her real hard.
What?
And most chicks that I did that to, what would they do? Flimsy.
Hold on. You hit her on your first date?
Yeah, I palm strike her on the shoulder.
Wait, what?
One day, if you ever meet me in person, I'll show you what I mean by that. But so I just went whack.
Yeah, it sounds like domestic violence on your first date.
Potentially. But I mean, everything turned out. I did it on quite a few. I went through a page where I was dating and I said, okay, this is going to be the test. We'll see if this works out or not. And what I found is that every time I'd hit a girl, she was flimsy and kind of just like flimsily flopped around.
Listen to what you said. Every time I hit a girl, she's flimsy.
Well, I hit her shoulder. I didn't hit her in the head. I just pushed her on the shoulder. So I'm not actually hitting her. So in that regard, I would push her. And what I'd find, because obviously, bro, I have a very strong personality. Not every woman's going to be able to deal with a fucking guy like me. I'm a little bit crazy. So in that regard, I'm like, okay.
Are you checking to see if you can hit him to make sure before you date him?
What I'm checking is this. I'm checking their mental stability. If I push them from the side and they hold their structure together, I'm like, hmm. And I made that observation with her. Obviously, at that point, I was seeing a few different women. And so the people that I was choosing from at that point, who was the one that I stuck around with for all this time? And I didn't have a girlfriend prior to the age of 29. I never really had a full-on girlfriend.
Has any of them came back with the right cross?
No, none of them. They were just kind of like, what the fuck are you doing? That's kind of what most people do. But this is an FP thing. People at Functional Patterns who've done my certification courses, they know exactly what I'm talking about. So I just gave her the push test. She held structural integrity together, and we have a very, very, very healthy relationship. Because I looked at her, I was like, man, her posture is kind of good.
All right, you know, man. Nadal, if people start now emailing and say, look, I went out with this girl, I pushed her, and then she hit me, and I went to jail, and you're going to see all these relationships now. I shoved my wife tonight, and then she hit me with a pan.
I'm not recommending that you do this unless you're trained through functional patterns. Don't do it. You'll know how to sequence it if you train through functional patterns. Do not do this unless you're properly trained to do it. But really what I'm leaving it at, man, is this. It's like you look at a person. I don't look at like, man, that girl's got a big old ass. I look at, man, that girl's got a big old ass because her lumbar spine is neutral. That's a healthy ass. Or I'll say, man, look at that girl's thoracic spine. I've seen so many girls that are people would define as very attractive, and then I look at them and I'm like, you know, you're not that attractive when I think about it, because it's like you seem like you got the makeup and all that shit, your face is good, you know, your butt looks good and everything, but when I look at your spine, you look flimsier than shit. It's like, how long are you going to be able to preserve what you are at that given point, because you're completely unsustainable? So I think in the future, what people are going to look at with each other is like, how symmetrical are you? How symmetrical are your shoulders? How neutral is your pelvis? How neutral is your rib cage? Now that I look at it, and if everybody that's around FP, when they start looking at that, everybody's looking for that kind of stuff. It's not, oh, is she hot or is he good looking? It's like, yeah, his posture really sucked. It's like when you deal with somebody who has very good grounding, right? When I pushed my girlfriend and she held together solid, I was like, okay, there's depth to this. I find that when somebody's hollow from the inside and you push them laterally, and this doesn't happen to everybody, you push them laterally where they kind of sway, there's something mechanically going on there. I can explain the biomechanics of it. But when something mechanically happens that way, you're dealing with a flimsy, insecure person most of the time. And I've had it with even people that I've trained who I don't work with anymore, where, you know, you deal that with them, and even if you push them, you still notice their neck kind of do this. They're kind of like, they try and stabilize with their neck because they were hollow in terms of their intra-abdominal pressure, and it completely manifested into their behaviors cognitively. So I think what it comes down to is that it's okay to look at people and think, okay, you know, that person's not attractive or that is attractive. Clearly there's a symmetry that we're looking for with people. I think there is an attractiveness and a non-attractiveness.
They've done all those tests too, for sure. They did the test with the symmetry. I mean, that's what we find attractive. That's why I'm out of the game. My nose likes to hang out over here.
No, but you can change that. I'm actually, if you look at my nose, it's been broken on a few different occasions from sparring, but it's been broken a few times. But within time, give me about 2-3 years, my face is actually going to become almost completely symmetrical. So you have to realize when people start talking about that one side of your face is a certain way and the other side of your face is another way, I ponder the question, is that a conditioned trait? If your muscles on your left pec major and your right pec major are symmetrical and you rotate equally on your thoracic spine to your left and to your right, will your face almost become more symmetrical? These are the questions that I'm pondering. And if I looked at I have my passport picture. I'd bring it right now, but I don't want to deal with that. But if you look at my passport, actually, I don't want to put the numbers and shit on it. That'd be stupid. Yeah. But if you look at the pictures of my passport from about 8-9 years ago to now, or from to about 2-3 years ago, you'll see my nose actually drifted over to the side. My face wasn't so crushed from one side to the other. So the thing is, you can change your symmetry. You can actually change your aesthetic looks. You actually can look much better than what you do right now by changing your mechanics. You have to realize there are muscles on your face. If your hamstrings can drift your pelvis anteriorly into an anterior pelvic shift, then, and your hip flexors can pull you into an anterior pelvic tilt, then at that point your masseters can deviate your jaw in a manner that's going to make it asymmetrical. So you have to realize, even with what's going on in your face, that can be changed, but it needs to be codified. And it's not going to be codified in the way that people are doing training at this given point. In the way that people see things, it's not going to be codified. So can we accomplish vanity? Of course. I'm doing it. Now I'm starting to incorporate functional bodybuilding because I found a way to build a pec major with the external obliques, with the internal obliques, and connect that with my adductor on the contralateral side, where we actually work the anterior oblique sling, because I'm finding that the pec major is just an extension of this sling pattern that's going on through the body. So we can actually do functional bodybuilding. I can build my biceps into a very full look very effectively, and I can do that functionally. So you're going to be seeing, and I just recently discovered this, but this is going to be where you see somebody who you'd be like, you know, if that guy lifts weights, he would never build muscle. You're going to see people like that building muscle. Why? Because I morphed their structure. I changed their structure. I repositioned their joints to where now those tissues have no choice. The ones that were you know, that were morphed because of a confidence issue. Now it's going to open up. Now we fire the pecs with the rotation, and now you're going to look at people that look like those Greek statues. Their serratus anterior wrapping around the rib cage. You're going to look at their intercostals popping out. You're going to see their obliques coming out. Maybe not so much of a six pack, but you're going to see this fucking cylinder of tissue that just makes you look like a beast, right? So for the guys that are looking for that, you're going to eventually have that happening. And I've been seeing that here in the gym as we've been employing this. You're starting to see guys starting to put on mass. So they're starting to get that aesthetic look that everybody's looking for. But where does it all start? It all starts with physics. How are you going to make yourself more symmetrical if you're not thinking about the physics equation in the first place? Do you see what I'm saying here?
Yeah, 100%, man. I'm following you. For me, I love the fact that somebody is out there asking those questions, that somebody has to be in the forefront pondering that advancement. Because if we all just stay stationary on what we're fed or what we know, or just repackage something else and call it something else, we can't evolve into it like we have. And if, you know, we agree that we're evolving species, then I think what we do, how we move, how we think, those things have to evolve at the same time. And only even in societies and worlds and cultures, when you see the evolution of thinking halted, do you start to see the development of the culture itself being halted? You know, so as we develop as a culture, we have to expand how we think and what we believe, ask the tough questions that generally reflect on ourselves, on what we believe and what we've been fed and even what we've experienced. So for me, you are in the forefront of asking those tough questions, testing those real ideas, trying to see how we can naturally change things, tapping into what exists, but using the customized version, man. It's a forefront notion. It's people like you that are living their cognitive rampage, taking the bullets, taking the arrows, because look, it's a $1 trillion industry, brother, in the health world. So in the $1 trillion industries of programs and patents, etc., yeah, you're going to have haters because you got investors over there. It's the same thing on my mental health side. On my mental health side, brother, I get fought by the ones that have investors, that have big pharma involved, that have AKA research, right? I get back the same way. When you come with an approach that's outside of the conservative legislated idea of this is how you do it, you take bullets. You're living it, bro. I mean, you're the epitome of that. And whether things are backed or arguable or whatever, the idea is that we are talking some theoretical backing. We're talking some science. We're talking experience. You know, it's about just questioning everything, brother. And you're at the front of that, man. I love this shit.
Yeah, I think the fact that you're saying that there's investors involved in everything. I mean, let me put it this way. It costs you about $3,000 to be affiliated with CrossFit. I think $3,000-$4,000. You get a weekend certification, and then you I think you have to pay them about a $3,000 annual fee to use the name CrossFit. So I've made posts before discussing CrossFit and my personal feelings of it that is destructive. And I mean, you don't need to. I think it's interesting because the NSCA, I think they wound up getting a lawsuit because they made a scientific study showing that CrossFit hurt people, and CrossFit disputed that it doesn't hurt people. But I mean, come on, man, it's clear that CrossFit is hurting people. I have people in my gym. I've trained so many clients who've dealt with the effects of CrossFit. I think there's a good. I'm not going to say that CrossFit's hurting people. I'm going to say that there's a good possibility that they're hurting people. Right? There's a good possibility that even if they're not hurting them right now, that in the long term, those biomechanical patterns that you're ingraining onto a person's structure are then going to be felt later on as they get older. So even if you don't hurt them now, they're going to feel it in about 5 to 10 years. They're going to feel those deficiencies pop up on their body. So just because you say that it doesn't hurt them right now doesn't mean that it's not going to hurt them later.
So what you're saying, I'm just connecting. So even if because what a lot of people would say is the reason they're going to be hurt is because the form is wrong. So what you're saying, though, is even if the form is right, over time, the movement itself actually will be the injury.
Okay. So I had a when I first started at 24 Hour Fitness, I had a manager. His name was Jim Patterson. This guy was a fucking technician. He had the best staff in 24 Hour Fitness, probably in the entire country. These trainers were really smart. I was lucky enough to choose this gym to be my first gym. And so this guy actually trained me to do bodybuilding and whatnot. And he was so meticulous, down to the best detail that he could see. I think I'm more meticulous than him now. For sure, I'm probably more meticulous because I'm looking at the vertebral structure, the thoracic spine before I institute a pec fly. But he was very meticulous about a lot of things. And so we would do everything. Like, at my meatiest of meathead days, I was benching about 290, 295 as a one rep max, right? So I could lift, my bench press was probably one of my stronger lifts. He had me dropping down to about 145 pounds, 155 for about 5-6 repetitions because I was almost trying to perfect the movement. And within time, I kept following this program, mixing in some functional work, but I started doing that, focusing on my technique and having good form. And the next thing you know, my shoulders started hurting, my lower back started hurting, and I'm like, what the fuck? I'm not even lifting heavy, dude. I'm not even lifting heavy. Why am I getting these pains? It's like I'm taking a very pragmatic approach. I'm splitting my days well. I'm even taking time to do my corrective exercise. Why am I still hurting? This doesn't make any sense. So when people say, well, you know what? It's the form that's screwed up when you do CrossFit. It has nothing to do with that. What it has to do with is what is your blueprint? Is your blueprint to make human are you training a human being or are you training a kangaroo? Because kangaroos, they operate. Remember that way I was talking about with your legs? That's how kangaroos are. Are you training a human or are you training a kangaroo? That's what it ultimately comes down to. I'm training humans. That's why when people do FP for extended periods of time, they don't get hurt. That's why I've been on this 9-year, 10-year run since I've been doing FP, and I don't feel pain. I feel better at age 32 than I did when I was at 22 by a mile. I actually move like an athlete now. Before I was coordinated, now I'm coordinated and I'm athletic. If I play basketball, you're going to have a very difficult time guarding me, and you're going to have a very difficult time getting past me, even if you try muscling me. Whatever, I have made myself into a good athlete. So with that said, in terms of the CrossFit, if I begin to dismantle CrossFit and discuss how damaging it is on the body, of course we have to consider if you're making $200,000-$300,000 a year selling CrossFit at your gym, you think you're going to be like, oh yeah, you're right. And then I'm just going to turn everything around. Now I have to employ this functional pattern stuff, which actually literally takes about 2 years to really fully digest, to really fully form and understand what you're doing. It's about a 2-3 year process before you really begin to gather what the hell's going on. It takes a while to adjust into it. So then I could start a new business, and then that business is probably going to struggle because it's not selling the same shit. Of course, they're thinking, you know, if I just buy into the CrossFit marketing machine, I'm going to make money right now. I don't have to deal with any struggles. So of course, if I discuss, you know, the disadvantageous nature of Olympic lifting on athletes, and you have a strength and conditioning coach who's making his money off of selling Olympic lifting, then of course, what's he going to say? But that's the problem. If you stand to gain money from it goes back to communication. Can you communicate with each other? If we don't have common gain, obviously you and I, Adam, we have common gain here because from what I'm hearing, and even looking at some of your podcasts, you have an anti-establishment feel to what you do. And it's not to say that it's bad. It's just saying that it's good because you're questioning the common paradigm. So you and I have something to gain here. You're gaining because you're anti-establishment, obviously, in what you're doing, and I'm anti-establishment in what I'm doing. There's no doubts about that kind of stuff, right? So you and I can communicate. Look how much we're bonding in this interaction, right? But let's say if you're making money off of the establishment, and I'm saying, no, the way that you're doing that is dishonest, and you're hurting people because of X, Y, and Z, you might be inclined to say, fuck you. I don't want to listen to what you have to say. Even if you're right, I don't want to have to listen to that. I wish you'd be more sensitive to my reality. And I am sensitive to it. I understand that Olympic lifting coaches and all that stuff, they have to make a living. I'm understanding of that. But at the end of the day, we got to call a spade for what it is. We got to call a spade a spade. And the truth of the matter is, if you're taking traditionalized lifting, you know it's hurting you. That shoulder pain that's going the after you do your workouts, that's not normal. That's not good. If you feel a knee problem or a lower back problem after any exercise that you do, something's wrong. People rarely get that at functional patterns. Yes, you do hard workouts. You can actually do a hard workout at FP, and not only do you not feel pain and you don't have to stretch afterwards, you actually feel more flexible afterwards. You feel energized, or if it's at nighttime, you don't feel energized. You feel tired because it's helping you develop a circadian rhythm. So the whole thing is you look at the industry. You see it and you're like, of course, people are going to be biased to what's out there. You don't find people passionately defending functional patterns that often. Why? Because nobody's making money from functional patterns yet. It hasn't become a household thing. Once it does become a household thing, you're going to see people defend functional patterns even more strongly than what they do if you attack deadlifts. Or the first day that I did it, oh my God, I got flamed so hard when I attacked deadlift the first time. Well, I didn't even attack it. I just said, here's some things that you may want to question about a deadlift. And I mean, the people just outright said, you're a fucking idiot. And I would address their points. And people just, you know, you have to consider this. When you run, you're suspended on rotation. You ever notice that when people run, they have to rotate their upper body? Okay, so pay attention to that. And if you don't do that, your reticular activation system is going to tell you, okay, look for people rotating their T-spine when they run. The quality of that rotation happening in the T-spine determines the quality of their extension, of their limbs doing this back and forth. Everybody's always obsessed with this thing called triple extension, where you do plantar flexion, knee extension, and hip extension. Everybody's obsessed with triple extension, but they don't consider, am I doing triple extension like this with both my legs, or am I doing triple extension like this? The quality of your extension happening this way when you sprint is dependent upon how well you rotate your gears at your upper body. It's like a fucking gear at the upper part. It's like a coil, and it's just rotating back and forth. These are the things that Olympic lifting doesn't condition, because it's not rotational. There are no rotational components when you are training your extension. There's not any rotation involved in your trunk when you're doing the extension at the hip joint. Also, you have to realize you're lifting an object vertically. It's moving down and up. If an object moves vertically in this fashion, then what does that mean? If it goes down and up like that, it's not training you to move this way. When your legs are moving this way, that's called a parabolic motion. It's a parabola, right? This is completely horizontal. This is vertical. When you mix them both, what do you get? You get a parabola. This is parabolic motion. When your arms swing, that's a parabolic motion. It's horizontal. We have to understand that the movement is horizontal. When you rotate your trunk, that's not longitudinal at all. Longitudinal, again, longitudinal just meaning that it's going down and up. When you do a deadlift, a snatch, a clean and jerk, when you do any of those types of movements, you're not conditioning a human organism. You're conditioning, I guess, some parts of basketball. When you're going to jump vertically, you might condition some of those attributes. But the truth of the matter is, you can't call what you're doing functional. And that's one thing that I've been talking about with the fitness industry, is what does functionality even mean? We have to consider functionality is – we have to consider that a relative attribute for a specific organism. Am I going to teach a dog to run on 2 feet? Am I going to do that, Adam? Of course not, right? Can a fish move on land, Adam, yes or no?
No.
Yes, it can. No, a fish can move on land.
Can they move? Well, yeah, they can wiggle on land, sure.
But will they operate very well on land?
No.
If you wanted to make a fish swim faster, somehow figure that out, would you put that fish on land? Of course not. If you want humans to move better, you have to look at what the human needs. What is the human's biological need first? What is his biomechanical need? And you don't see that. But of course, this is counterculture. This is counter the profit systems. If this is right, we have to understand that we're gonna have to start rewriting a lot of biomechanics textbooks. But that's where it's going to anyway. I'm not the only one doing this. There's other people in the industry that are coming to these realizations as well. And we're gonna have to. Biomechanics is evolving because any science is going to evolve. If you have you can't call Olympic lifting a science if it's been doing this. If strength and conditioning coaches have been doing the same thing for the last 30, 40 years, then that's not a science anymore. You're dealing with a dogma at that given point. This is a dogma. We have to ask ourselves, is this really scientific? I see FP being much more scientific than what's out there. Why? Because it's continually evolving. And you can see people's structure changing. And I think just right now we're starting to get a little bit of momentum, but it's been a struggle having to deal with these things, mainly because when you operate outside of the context of how the establishment makes its money, you're bound to have to deal with some kind of a resistance that happens with certain things. And there's other people out there. You see like Ido Portal, who seem like they're doing the movement things. But even then, when I see what Ido Portal and like the Move Nats and things like that, what they're doing, they're still to some degree feeding into the indoctrination, because you have two different communities as far as I'm concerned with the industry. You have the scientists, the hard nosed scientists. And then you have the progressives, right? NASM had brought somebody in the middle. NASM had done that. But then CrossFit came about, and it turned everybody either into a hardcore scientist or a hippie progressive. And so you have to realize, when you decide to start doing this natural movement and this, you're feeding into the fucking hippies. That's really what it is. You're dealing with hippie culture. And FP does not feed into hippie culture, because FP doesn't use words like love. FP doesn't use terms like freedom of movement. What is freedom? What does the term freedom actually mean? We have to ask ourselves, can we be free? Is that the proper word to use when it comes to movement? As free as you may be, you can jump up, and then what's gravity going to do? It's going to bring your ass right the fuck back down, so therefore you don't have freedom of movement. So the term freedom, if you can start walking on walls and you can go into outer space and live in outer space without a spacesuit, then I'll be like, yeah, you've come to a closer approximation to a freedom of movement. You have a liberty, right? If you start using like liberation, things. So yeah, I feel so liberated.
It's good marketing.
It is. It's great marketing. This is great Edward Bernays style marketing where it's like, you know, you're using word associations to get people to buy in because everybody wants to feel free. How much do hippies love the word freedom? I want to be free. That's what it is. So you have to realize with functional patterns, we feed neither demographic. We don't feed the hard-nosed scientists. We don't feed the hippie population. We're kind of in the middle. We're trying to start a new demographic. Right. This is going to be a new type of person that views a reality, hopefully from a more objective viewpoint, but understanding that it's still a subjective viewpoint regardless. The reality as we see it is subjective. Nothing about reality can really be quantified. It can only be quantified given a certain mechanical set of variables. But if you drop acid or you do shrooms, then guess what happens? All that mechanical shit gets thrown out the fucking window. And you're like, okay, I'm in another reality right now. And it's like, I thought I died. So, okay, I guess I'm dead, and this is the afterlife, apparently. You know, you can get dropped into a reality like that. So it tells you the subjective nature of our reality. But the key point is that we're trying to objectify. We're trying to create objectives that eliminate confusion. When you start doing this freedom of movement crap that you see in the industry, what's the problem? You're still feeding into subjective viewpoints that don't really take anybody anywhere. Of course, we can talk about, you know, I feel great doing it, but what about the millions of people in hospitals who can't get back into exercising again because they can't get over a knee problem? They just say, okay, the PT just tells me I can't run anymore. Isn't that a fucking problem? Shouldn't the PT say, you need to fix your body to the point where you can run? You need to solve your issue until you can start running again, because the less that you can move with your body, the less that you can run, the quicker you're on the path towards dying. Like, that should be the the thought process that's going on here, but you don't see it. You don't see it working that way. So it's an interesting time that we're living in, man. And I think a new human's gonna come out of this. And this is all, I'm sure you're probably aware of Jacques Fresco, right?
Yeah, man.
I would call this a Venus Project type of human. That's the type of human that I'm trying to condition. I'm trying to skip a step in the evolutionary chain and just say, okay, look, we are going to test things. Rather than us debating whether this works or not, let's come to a common understanding. Let me break this down before you interject, because this is really important. So the ankle primarily does this. That's called dorsiflexion, plantar flexion. It can also do this. It's called supination and pronation, right? The knee joint can do this and this, but it can also, in given context, it can actually rotate, right? So we have to think, if the ankle's doing this and the knee joint is doing this, what plane of motion is that operating in? It's working in a linear plane, right? So it's indicative that the leg is supposed to probably move in the sagittal plane. If you think about when you run, in what range of motion does your leg primarily operate in? This plane of motion. It's a straight leg. That's your femur moving back and forth. So that's all sagittal plane. Right. In order to accompany that extension, the upper body has to rotate. Right. In order, when we're going to run, the upper body has to rotate to facilitate the extensions happening in the lower body, right, in the sagittal plane. The arms then have to do this. They have to follow. They have to accompany the legs at the lower portions, and they have to swing in the sagittal plane, moving forward and back. If you and I can come to an understanding of that, and then we say, you know what? You have a new system of training, a new system of techniques that optimizes this function. I'll be like, okay, awesome. Let's put it to the test. You got 6 months. Apply what the fuck you're doing on this human body. And if we see that the person's gait cycle is even the same or even worse, then we throw what you're doing into the garbage. We're going to throw it into the toilet. That's the kind of process that we need to develop. If a person has better running mechanics and they're running pain-free, that's the kind of scientific revolution that we have, one in which it's actually testing. And this is very much like the Venus Project. Jacques Fresco says, do you think a man will ever get to the moon? People are like, not in a million years. That's not going to happen. Not in a thousand years. That's not going to happen. Right? That's what most people would say, because he's 100 years old now. But in his original times, people would have been like, that's never going to happen. Well, the question, who are the people saying that this is not going to happen? Who are the people saying, no, you can't do that? When you tell the Wright brothers, you can't do that. Well, what's your experience? What's your background? We've given people in our culture, we've given too many people the opportunity to have opinions in this world. If somebody talks about engineering, guess what I'm going to do? Zip it. okay, let me just listen and see if I can understand what this guy's saying. If somebody's talking about the triune brain and they're a neurologist, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to just sit there and just shut up. I'm not going to talk. I'm not going to interject. I'm not going to say, no, that's not right because of this and that. My background is going to tell me, you know what? That's not within my area of practice. Let me stay silent and not say anything. But we have a lot of people in the field of movement who've never tested themselves, right? Of course, you can say that your capoeira kicks and your whatever, your animal movements and whatnot are going to apply. But if you've actually trained fighters and you've had to take a fighter who didn't have, let's say, the attributes of a Conor McGregor before you work with them, and you had to nurture Conor McGregor-like attributes in a fighter, then you understand how destructive a ring dip is going to be, a ring muscle up is going to be to a fighter's arms, and how it's going to get their arms tired, and how it's going to make them flat-footed. Of course, you'll see that when you have that background. But the problem is, if you look at most people who are involved in any industry, how often do they really test what they do? And are the tests difficult enough to really reveal that your practice doesn't work? All I've ever dealt with from day one in my career is failure. I fail every single time I go into the gym. I fail because if a person's not able to run with perfect biomechanics after instituting my techniques after a session, I failed. Every day that I deal with my practice is a day of failure. It's like, okay, that was a good day at work. I failed like fucking 10,000 times on all these associations. That's my perception of how I view training. But if you look at most people in the industry, they're so confident. They're like, yes, I'm able to solve this, 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 and this. But you're like, well, where are your results? Right? If you're saying your diet works, let me see the results. Let me look at this person's hormones. Let me look at what happens to them. Are your tests even adequate? If you say, yeah, their hormones are better now, their cholesterol's better. Okay, let's put them in a situation where their parent dies or their brother dies, and let's check their hormones there. When a sibling dies, let's check their hormones and see if those hormones are still balanced. My perception is that through functional patterns, if you have these issues pop up in your life, your hormones shouldn't change that much. A traumatic incidents shouldn't affect you as much. You should be able to deal with the trauma and be like, you know what, I'm more okay with it. I'm able to understand it because hormonally I'm more balanced. I'm willing to put those tests on myself when it comes to my practice, which is something that most practices out there are not willing to do. They'll just say, this is how much gluteal activity you get during this test. It's not measuring. Is this test even relevant to begin with? Is this even relevant? And this goes back to the whole concept of the Venus Project. We test it. If you are going to make a bold claim, you better come with some extraordinary evidence. And from what I've seen out of the fitness industry, I'm still yet to see any real evidence. If everything is accepted by the journals of strength and conditioning and it works so great, I want to see it work on you. I want to see it work on your clients. I want to see them run. I want to see their mechanics from point A to point B change. If you don't believe that the lifting does that, this is what I'm aiming to do. We have to come to that conclusion that, you know what, this is what I'm aiming to do. And relative to what I'm aiming to do, I'm hitting my mark. Relative to what you're aiming to do, yeah, maybe you're hitting your mark. But in the same regard, is that mark relevant? If I'm putting somebody to run, that's a relevant mark. That's my perception of it.
Well, brother, I love it because it's funny you say that because on my side of the fence, away from the health industry, on my side, the personal growth epidemic that you see for personal bloggers and books, etc. A lot of people have an approach, have a philosophy, have a way to do it. I agree there's no one size fits all, otherwise there wouldn't be so many books. So what we recently decided to do, that you said that, is we partnered or are setting up a partnership, if you will, with the lady I've already referenced, Dr. Bahia Maroon, who was on the show yesterday, who is a researcher in just this. She researches the effectiveness of all types of philosophies, approaches, from big names to little names, to see what everything works, measuring the effectiveness. She actually has her own instrument that was approved for measuring and testing happiness and outcome benefit. It's really...
What's this tool called?
I'd have to go back and check, but just
is it a headband or what is it?
She's gonna have to explain all that. I didn't go that far with her talking about the instrument itself, but what we've decided to do, and she's agreed to help us right now, we're working out the specifics, is we are going to put the Cognitive Rampage to the test because it is a full-on philosophy. You actually envelop and reveal your own philosophy. You work a daily inventory that's fun. I teach actually rational self-analysis through steps, but it's not my way either. This isn't me going 1, 2, 3 steps and you get rich because because that wouldn't be authentic. People will cultivate it on their own. It's their own questions, their own reflections, what they reveal on their own, not me saying, here's the magical way. They customize it. And so as this lives, what we're going to do, she's going to help me. She's the expert there. Like you said, when she starts talking that, I quiet, and she's been kind enough to help. So we are going to test it. And what she told me was in the years that she's been testing in this field that she hasn't come across a life coach or a person that's putting their way, if you will, to a long-term or even some sort of longitudinal survey test of its long-term effectiveness. So what I do is I said, I didn't know that. So what I'm going to do is say, well, put me in the ring. And she's like, look, you know you may not like the outcome, right? And I said, of course, because
it may look shitty,
but I'd rather be at the end going, you know what, this can help 3% of people. This can help 20% of people.
Or maybe it's this, Adam. Maybe that wrongness then leads you to a right in terms of what you need to make adjustments on. Bam. Yeah, then it's going to work. That's fucking awesome, bro. I love it. That's so fucking awesome.
We're going for it, bro. I've said, fuck it. At least I can stand there, right? And I can say I live by the authentic.
That's balls. I like it.
Well, and she was so elegant, brother. She's so much smarter than me. She's so in this very long, elegant term tells me this. I'm going to sum it up in caveman terms. What she basically said is, you may not like the results, and in no way with any financial skew will we skew these results, or financial influence will we skew these results in any way. What we find is what we find, okay? And she basically said that really nicely. And I'm like, yeah, that's what I want, man. You know, test it authentically so I can stand there and go, hey, science said this and you can duplicate it. Mm-hmm. You know, it call me a charlatan now, dude. You know what I mean? That's
exactly.
That's where I think. And for me, though, I don't want to approach this either in some, everybody test it. What I'm kind of doing is I even talk in the book about this is a building block. I carved it from other people's ideas, thoughts, research, and my own. And that's what we do in this field. I think there should be more of that in the health field, more of that. Let me build from you instead of this is the way. When we all agree, there's so many paths to get to where we want to get to.
Well, but that's the difficulty with me, man. And I don't think there are multiple paths. I think humans have gone. It's clear that we came from what continent? Africa, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, Ethiopia. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, right. So I think that when it comes to biomechanics, there is one path. I think when it comes to your hormones, I believe there is one path. We're not nocturnal, right? We sleep at night. We sleep when we wake up in the morning. We are operate throughout the day. I think there is one path that relates to human beings. That's kind of what my claim actually is, that there is one path and that it can be quantified. Of course, I feel that in the training field, nobody says that there is one path. I don't think anybody's really making that claim. I've never seen anybody make that claim. I think anybody who does Olympic lifting says, you know, you should mix in different things, this and that.
True.
Functional patterns, I don't believe you should mix in certain things unless it respects the notion of biomechanics and it respects the biorhythms that we've adapted over the course of millions of years. So my perception is I'm going to go out on a limb and say, yeah, this functional pattern system is the only way. I will say that I will put my reputation on the line to say that. And I will say that. And I am very, very confident that because we're going through the scrutiny of the testing every day as we work with people, that it's going to reveal that.
Yeah, I was saying maybe we could team up even when maybe it's definitely. It'd be up to Doc that we work in something physical because, you know, I'll send you a copy of my book, man, and kind of go through it and you'll see in the inventory how they apply certain things. Maybe you may find something that you could take this application that you're working on, this functional patterns, this philosophy, and see maybe if there's this a plug-in, you know, to...
I'm going to assume that, yes, there's probably going to definitely be something there, man. I think... Anti-establishment minds are going to unite on something because, again, we have common gain. There's always a way that you can find something. When both sides can gain, you'll find a way to do something like that. So, yeah, definitely. I'd definitely love to take a look at it. But, again, there is a way. There is one way to make a human body healthy. It's just how do we find – are we trying to find that way? Are we testing that way? Mm. You can't say that there's not one way if you're not testing it. That's the reason I say there is one way is because I've tested it. If I see somebody with a kyphosis and I eliminate and it took me years to eliminate that, other people will say that's impossible. That's just their structure. That's just that person's identification. I'm like, no, that's not their identification. Watch. look at how it changes within a week. Look at how quickly I can change that person's structure.
But biologically speaking, though, right? Biologically speaking, there's got to be multiple paths. I mean, we're really kind of like semantics, because you're talking about the individual approach is worked into your functional pattern idea.
Well, what it comes down to is that the way that you're going to approach each, even then, man, I think there's a cookie cutter approach that exists. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that. I know at that point, a lot of people are going to think this guy's one arrogant piece of shit. I really don't care. My perception is that humans all need to sleep during the evening, and they need to wake up, or they need to be awake when the sun is out. I know that biorhythm needs to be present. And if we can base things on principles like that, we first have to come to an agreement as to this is the amount of this hormone that we need. This is the amount of oxytocin you need to be stimulating. This is the amount of norepinephrine you need to be stimulating. First, we have to come to an agreement as to what optimal physiology even is.
Wouldn't that vary between individual though?
I don't think so. I think let's say if I get an Iron Man, right? And it always comes down to this. It's never so. It's always under what type of testing is this kind of a physiology going to pop up? You know, I'll give you another story. I think I may have said this on a podcast somewhere else, but I'll say it again because it's a very, very interesting story. I remember when I was training Muay Thai. I was training boxing, actually, with a man named John Exalves. Really, really good. I mean, probably the best striking coach I've ever seen. And I was fortunate enough to get to work with this guy. And he started – one day we went into sparring, and I was doing all my functional patterns movements. This was about 5 years ago. And I was doing all my FP movements, you know, like my conditioning was on point. You'd figure, you know what, Naudi is a fine, well-tuned conditioned athlete. He's doing three-dimensional movement, exercising his slings. He can move his body like a beast. And so we go in there and we spar, and we go about 7-8 rounds straight. He doesn't give me a break. By the fifth round, I'm already like just gassed out. I can barely move. And you see this guy who's like about 42, 43 at the time, moving around like a ballerina, like if nothing's going on. And I'm going, okay, what the fuck? Why am I at age 24, 25 or whatever? I was 26 maybe. Why is a guy like me in my 20s gassing out with you, a guy in his early 40s? This doesn't make any sense. And this guy doesn't work out. He barely would work out. He would occasionally run on a treadmill. He would hardly do anything. We end up going to 12 rounds. He finally gives me like my 30-second breaks going up to 12 rounds. And then I see him spar after that about another 15 rounds. So he sparred 27 rounds, and even with pro fighters as well. He was 27 rounds of sparring, and I'm going, okay, what the fuck? Like my perception of strength and conditioning has completely been turned upside down. I thought, you know, you have to work out hard in order to increase your body's capability, body's metabolism to get your body to get used to consuming oxygen, all that stuff. And I was like, okay, this is completely breaking the rules. What the fuck? Why is this guy who never works out not getting tired while he's in here? And what it comes down to is that he recognizes the environment. He recognizes it. He's not foreign to it because his body knows how to adapt to it. In the same token, we have to ask ourselves that if you can create enough stressful situations on a human body, if you can create enough stress on a human body, when you put them in reality, is a stress of that reality going to override the stress that you did in the training environment? So let's say, for instance, if you want people to not stimulate cortisol while they're on a carnival ride, there's a way that you could probably do it. If you put somebody in a simulator that's not a carnival ride, you put them in a simulator. I don't know if you've ever sat in those ones where you have the screen there and the thing shakes and it moves you around. Put them in that and have them focus on some breathing. Have them focus on that. Get them to do it every single day. Within time, if they get used to those physics and how everything shakes, it may be likely that you change their physiological reaction specifically to that environment. So we have to ask ourselves, what environment are we trying to test ourselves into? So when you think of the cognitive science community, you say, well, yeah, because of this, it revealed that this was that this practice seemed to have worked. But how many realities are you testing this for? Are you testing it for the reality of somebody pulls a gun in your face, and then you have to snatch that gun out of his hand and then whoop that dude's ass? Is it training you for that environment? We have to ask those questions. How are your hormones reacting? It's that whole concept of allostasis that Robert Sapolsky, I read in his book, Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers. He talks about allostasis. It's what's your adapted physiology? I think there's a way that you can get a human being. Like, there's been times where I would be driving, and or let's say I'd be riding in somebody's car and somebody would almost hit us and everybody'd be like, ah, and I'd be like, I just turned the wheel, be like, okay, and I'm back. People would be like, why the fuck? Why didn't you flip out? I was like, what's the need to flip out? I just saw the car coming. I just turned the fucking steering wheel and I'm fine. Just like John X, when he was sparring, he's like, this is just a fight. What does it matter? My association to the environment is that I know what I'm doing here. I'm competent. And guess how John X's behavior is in almost everything else after that? Hey, what's up, dude? Yeah. Guess what it is? Even when I was working with Jeremy Stevens, Jeremy Stevens is one of the most chill dudes you'd ever meet in your life. I've rarely ever seen that guy upset about anything. Dude, this guy's tested. He's been through fucking wars. You get what I mean? It's like he's had to deal with losses and wins. I mean, the guy's a fucking winner at life. But why is that? I got to hang out. When you get to hang out with people like this who are actually getting tested, like let's say he's working at Alliance, which is one of the best. He's over there doing grappling. And, dude, these guys go like 2 hours, 2.5 hours straight of like drilling and then live goes for who knows how much time. This guy has been carved. He's been carved into a very, very exceptional person in that regard. So you have to realize if you try and condition an organism's physiology, or if you're going to try and say this is making a change, you have to ask yourself, what are the tests that you're even putting forward? Are the tests even relevant? So of course, there can't be an optimal physiology. There's only an optimal physiology under a relative set of circumstances. So what I'm saying is I have a set of circumstances in which the body is going to react in a particular way, and it needs to react that given way under my relative set of circumstances. Mechanistically, I'm going to be correct under that given set of circumstances because that's what I'm preparing it for. But can you be prepared for anything? Of course not. Your physiology is going to be modified by anything that's brand new to you, right? If you've trained to have a gun pointed at your face a million times, do you think that you're going to still react perfectly to that scenario? No, you're still going to be stimulating cortisol and norepinephrine. You're going to have to meet with the demands of that environment, and you're not going to react perfectly to it. But can you train yourself to be more better reacted to it? Of course. So is there an optimal physiology? Is there a one way to do things? Yes, but it depends on what are the variables that you're putting around that one way. And relative to the variables that I'm looking for, which is perfect gait, right, which is perfect gait cycle where the legs are able to move just the right amount of give on the PSIS and ASIS on the pelvis, the rib cage. Relative to the gait cycle, there's a way. Relative to how you move laterally, there's a way. Relative to throwing a ball, can you throw a ball just as hard and accurately with your right hand as you can with your left hand? When I'm able to do that myself, which I'm getting somewhat close, not perfect, but I'm getting closer. I'm starting to form this connection where I'll be able to throw just as well with this hand as I will with this hand. I'll be able to throw with both sides. If I throw a kick, Muay Thai, can I throw with my left leg as well as I can with my right leg? Until the industry actually accomplishes this, like I'm planning on accomplishing this, how can I really say that they are even conducting adequate tests to their science? That's my perception. I believe that there is one way of doing things. There is one way, and it's the scientific way. It's the way that deals with testing. If you test, 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 retest, test, retest, test, 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 you're bound to find the way. I think the scientific way is the way that we have to do it. But you have to deal with the scrutiny of saying, fuck, I failed. I did this wrong. Now I have to teach people how to do something a different way because the way I was teaching them last year didn't work. And that's why I tell them in this course, take what I say lightly, because this shit may change. I'm sorry. I know it works. You see this person's, you see that spine change, right? But I may have missed 50, 60 variables that may make that wrong. So you have to take what I say very lightly because this is science. It evolves. So there is one way of doing things, and that's employing science. But you have to ask yourself, are the tests that you're conducting adequate? If the testing is not adequate, then you're just convincing yourself of your dogma. You're creating a dogma and convincing yourself. The second you stop testing it is the second it's a dogma. If I train, your program has to become recreatable. And so for me, when it comes to people that get certified through functional patterns, you will see almost everybody change somebody's posture immediately. You'll see somebody crazy, crazy, crazy curves. Their posture is better, and you can actually see a physical change. Is it intrinsic? Of course not. They still have to cognitively train the muscles to get there. But can they get their body to a more straight posture? Of course. So this can be recreated. So for me, I want to deal with the scientific scrutiny. But the problem is that the scientists that exist today, they're not trying to deal with this testing. And I think it's because many of the systems that exist in our culture, many of the practices that exist don't want to deal with the scrutiny. I think if you're willing to deal with the scrutiny, you're going to arrive at the conclusion that you need to. And I've looked stupid many times doing what I do. I've been wrong so many times. I'm wrong every day of my fucking life. And I have to, there's points where I figured, you know, your spine always has to be neutral. I thought that years ago, but then as you arrive at certain conclusions, there's times where the body does have to get out of neutrality, where at that point, maybe sometimes you do need a scoliosis curve in your spine. But the question comes down to, is there tension on the structure when you're doing that kind of a scoliosis curve? Or if you're stretching your body, is there tension and counter tension involved with that? So there's a lot of shit that comes along with this stuff, man.
Well, the scrutiny also is not as better as the $2 trillion industry, if I can brand it and market it just right. So, I mean, you definitely find those that are in it for the money. Some are in it, you know, they really believe in what they do, and it has helped some people, and that exists. And if it helps one out of 6,000, then it helps somebody. And but, you know, I too would encourage the testing. I too would encourage the testing. You know, if one thing can help somebody to a purpose, I'm talking mental health, whether it's their approach, their philosophy. But if that's one stone that can lead you to another, I would only encourage those to keep stepping, keep finding more stones.
Let me put it this way: what are you preaching, Adam? You're preaching, okay, that you change this. If you change that, you command the rest of it, and it'll probably all come on its own. You're not really selling anything, man. You're selling, if you do sell something, it's probably going to be a product to help reestablish your mind. But if somebody tells me that antidepressants work, right? Because there are people that'll say, yeah, my antidepressants work. At what expense, right? Is it really working, or is it just working? Does a donkey work to get to transport goods from point A to point B?
Of course.
Yeah, so it works to transport things from point A to point B. But if I have an automobile or a train, are we going to still keep using the donkey in that circumstance?
Right. I mean, the side effect. That's why I call the book A Dose of Authentic Revelation with No Side Effects. I mean, for the most part, it's bringing the authentic power that we have to change our belief, yes, with the mind, but also talking about it from, you know, I'm a cognitive practitioner, really, but I'm also a behavioralist. I'm a naturalist. I'm an everythingist. So for me, it's a dynamic idea of this full-scale approach on all fronts of your life to change everything on a full approach. But it's about getting real with yourself and asking the questions most of us can't do, which are those inward related questions about what we believe to be our reality and the godforsaken truth.
Yep. No, but the key point is, from what I see it as, man, is you're trying to find holistic approaches to solve things. You have to always realize, you may think you're solving a problem, but all you're doing is tacking, you're just creating a compensation that may get exposed in 10, 20, 30, 40 years. That's my concern. When I institute a technique on a human body, or I discover probably about 25, 30 new things every time I go into the gym. Like, this is just the way that it works. I go in there and I'm like, okay, you know, I've seen people in the industry where they develop one exercise and they sell that for the next 10 years of their life. I'm like, I'll go in there, I'll discover 25 new things. But every single time I make a discovery, guess what I'm thinking? It's flawed because of this, and this. I'm always trying to pick out what's wrong with what I do. And because I've been doing that from day one, it's enabled me to actually solve more problems, because I'm thinking, okay, yeah, this person's rotating the T-spine, but every time that they rotate their T-spine, is their head turning along with that? Are they able to create a counter rotation of their T-spine with a cranial rotation? In what direction are their eyes moving every time that they rotate their cranium? Are they able to actually keep their eyes on you as they're doing their movements? How does that cranial rotation and that eye rotation actually deal with the thoracic rotation, pelvic rotation, femoral rotation, tibial rotation? That's what I'm always thinking about. So you can't do anything right. You're aiming in a direction, but nothing can be done correctly. But is there a better way to doing things? Always. But we always have to be willing to use the trains, right? To use new transportation systems so we don't get stuck at a donkey. The problem is that because people say something works, they shut their possibilities down because they feel that, you know what, yoga's working for me. It helped me with my lower back pain. Okay, as long as you never run, as long as you never go out for a run, that flimsiness that yoga's propelling on you, you'll never feel it. But if you ever want to go for a hike, or you actually ever want to move to your body, then you're going to realize, you know, yoga really isn't doing much for me. It's actually disintegrating my shoulder from my rib cage, my serratus anterior, my external obliques. It's creating a disintegration pattern, and it's not actually helping me. It's actually hindering me. It depends on what kind of testing that you have. So you can say what works in what relative set of circumstances. If you say deadlifts work great for me and they make me strong, of course, let me see you take, let's go play some basketball and let me see you move laterally and try and guard me as I cross you over. I want to see how your body reacts. At that point, I'm going to look at you. You're going to probably fall flimsily, And then I'm going to be moving across you. And then I'm going to say, yeah, your deadlifts didn't work there, did they? Because we put you through a certain set of circumstances. We put you through a certain set of tests. You have to ask yourself, is the preparation that you're putting forth actually adequate to the reality, to the stressors that we're facing on a regular basis? These are the questions that I put forth to people, man. Well, but that always changes.
The mental side of the questions that we're asking the same is, you know, are you testing, which is the true test, are you questioning your own beliefs? You know, so on that mental side, you know, I do encourage that whatever's working for you at the time on a mental side to pursue it. But what I also pursue is the optimization of don't close yourself off. You know, I speak to AA and NA members a lot to where it doesn't tell you that you have to close off all other help and approaches to practice that. So it may work for you to that degree, but we can optimize and we can push further and find that way. And that's kind of what, you know, you're speaking, I'm speaking is let's optimize both sides.
The issue comes down to this is, can you become too open-minded? That's the problem. That's the complexity in all of this, because you can open your mind to several different possibilities. Like, people are going to be like, you know what? You just need to try CrossFit, because if you try CrossFit, then you'll know what we're talking about. But I know if I try CrossFit, it's going to fucking destroy my joints. I know it's going to destroy my joints. I know my body. I understand biomechanics. So if you keep too much of an open mind, then at that point you hold yourself liable to hurt yourself. So the challenge comes down to, how do you find this? You get what I mean? My perception is,
well, don't you got to find that through experiencing it, right? So, I mean, for most people, I mean, you can take the knowledge that you have. You can definitely take competence that we have and apply that. I mean, please, if you can miss a pitfall in life because someone else did, use that. And so use that competence that people have already done through their own experience, for sure.
But what if no CrossFitter is publicizing how CrossFit's hurt them? What if nobody wants to admit to that? Then what? That's what ends up becoming the issue, where it's like, okay, well, am I going to try this? You have to. This is what it all boils down to for me, man. This is how I view trusting people or not. Is that person's bottom line everybody's bottom line? If people will be like, you know what, Naudi is narcissistic, he's blah 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 blah, I've had everything thrown my way. But what people don't ask is, if Naudi's world manifests, right, where people are balanced, their tissues are balanced, their cognition is probably more balanced, their hormones are balanced, does everybody stand to gain from that? Does everybody stand to gain from a Venus Project type society? Of course. If there is no more competition and robots are handling everything, then we have to ask ourselves, Jock Fresco seems like one real arrogant bastard by the way that he talks. He seems very arrogant and very smug in the way that he speaks. But truth be told, if we listen to the way that he thought, if we follow the way, does the whole world stand to gain from that? Now, if we look at Tony Robbins, right? If you look at somebody like Tony Robbins, what's he professing? Everybody needs to become a fucking millionaire. They're okay with that. And no, that doesn't work. That, from my perception, is like, if everybody becomes a millionaire, for every millionaire, there needs to be a very poor person in a third world country to counteract the balance of that person living an excessive life. So what it comes down to is this, is how is a person living? You guys see how I'm living in here? It's not really particularly organized, right? For the money I've made in my career, I'm not really like living lavish, man. It's kind of janky in here. That's my perception, is how somebody really living their life. Are they living? If that person gains, right, is the whole world going to gain? Or is that person's selfishness feeding the world, or is that person's selfishness taking away from the world? So when I think of CrossFit, what is it? The person, Greg Glassman, people say you shouldn't attack people's characters. You should attack what they do. I disagree. I think the first thing that you should attack on a person, the first thing, is their character. Because their character reveals their motive. And if the motive is fucked up, then guess what? You can conduct a scientific study. And if your motive is to prove your point, then guess what? You're going to put very limited parameters on your scientific study so you can sell your dogma. That's what you're going to do. So my perception is, to become a very good scientist, I tell this to everybody, the most important part of being a good scientist is being a good human. That's it. That's the most important facet. Being an honest person is the most important part of being a good scientist. But the minute you throw money into the equation, the minute you start telling yourself, well, you know what, I'm going to try this new thing. When I look at people talking about freedom of movement and the words that they use and the way that they do their shit, I'm asking, is this person really thinking about the greater good? I push Jock Fresco like fucking crazy. I push the Venus Project, because truth be told, man, I believe that's what we have to head to. I don't think people can conceptualize things like that, but I truly believe that's what it comes down to. But all you have to do is just look at the person and say, you know what? Does this person seem like they're actually trying to contribute, or are they just trying to sell the next fucking thing? And if you see, okay, look at how they're living. Okay, that's somebody I can trust. I'll try it out. But if I look at Greg Glassman, the guy who started CrossFit, he doesn't even do CrossFit. He can't even do it. He can't physically do it with his body. Why? Because it's going to destroy his fucking joints. That's what it is. I look at the person, I'm like, okay. It's complicated though, man, because you can carry an open mind, but then you can carry too much of an open mind, and it just sends you down this rabbit hole of shit. The key point is, I think Terrence McKenna talks about this, where, you know what, people aren't so mathematically inclined. We're not inclined to calculate, because at the end of the day, what are you? You're a mathematician and you're making calculations every single day. The question is, how do you become competent enough to separate the shit from the shinola? Right? That's what it is. That's the challenge in all of it, is how do you extract what's valuable from what's not valuable? That's the biggest challenge that I think I face. And that's also what I've gathered from Jacques Fresco in terms of his works. And that's why I always recommend that shit. But like, from what I'm seeing, man, I'm seeing that you're obviously in the, if you're already telling me you're willing to test what you're doing and willing to test that you're going to fail, fuck, bro. You're already a billion steps ahead of what everybody else is doing, man. I think testing is really what it comes down to. I think we have to unleash science. We have to use it fully, and we have to say, you know what? If I end up broke from being wrong, if FP ends up teaching the wrong dogma and I end up fucking dead broke, then so be it. I'm going to have to start all over again. I'm going to hope that I can react that way if I end up being proven wrong by what I'm saying. I don't think I will, because I'm testing it. I test more than anybody in the industry. I'm very confident of that. And I'm attempting to objectify my testing. And I'm thinking about, okay, how many realities is my testing going into? So I don't think I'm going to be proven wrong in that regard, because I'm the person that's actually, this system is the one being tested. But if that day ever did come, I would hope that I will actually be able to say, you know what, I'm wrong, and I need to start over. Functional patterns is a fucking fraud, and it needs to be transitioned, and we need to take in this new system. That's my hope. That's my goal. But we'll see what happens if we cross that road.
I think we both could agree, then, the start to changing your life on NEN, I think, begins with humility and self-competence.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think it's knowing when to just say, okay, I don't know much. I was planted into this weird reality. I'm fucking planted in here, and I don't know what I'm doing here, right? My parents didn't know what they were doing. They were just reacting, and their parents were just reacting, and I just popped up here, right? So the humility of knowing I don't know anything, and then also saying, well, you know what? It's like I need to learn new things so I can develop my character, become more competent. I need to build inferences within myself to become aware of what the fuck is actually around here. So I need to maybe read books from time to time, look for outlets where people are informing me about things that actually matter. And I think that's another complicated thing. Jacques Fresco also talks about, you know, if you learn where every crater is on the moon, what is that information useful for you or not?
No.
What if you're going to go to the moon?
Then, yeah, that would help.
Okay. So if you're learning things that are superfluous to your needs, then in that regard, that's kind of the kind of shit that you need to throw into the garbage. People need to think, okay, what kind of information is relevant? Is this information going to help me right now? That's what people need to start asking themselves. Is this going to help me? And then, but even beyond that, they need to ask themselves, is what I'm looking for even relevant? Right? There's another thing. I mean, I'm writing on Jacques Fresco's fucking penis right now, but I'm gonna put it this way. He said, if we had aliens from outer space come down, we wouldn't be, if we were smart, we wouldn't say, hey, we come in peace. You wouldn't say that. You know what you would tell an alien? What should I ought to know? What do I need to know so I can think like you? If you met Einstein, what would most people ask for? Can I have your autograph? Can I have your autograph? What should they, you know what I would ask Einstein? Be like, hey man, how can I think like you? Because I'm an idiot. And I really don't know what I'm doing. I want to see reality like you do, because you see it on a whole other level. How can I think like you? Fuck the autograph. I need to take – I don't care about you. I'm not trying to idolize you. I want your capability. How the fuck do I attain your capability? What do I need to do? Those are the questions that people need to ask themselves. You know what I mean?
Question everything. Question everything you've been told, everything you believe. That's what I would say. I'd say start there by question everything, including everything you think you know.
Your indoctrination, everything, man. You gotta go down the path of assuming that everything that you learned is probably wrong to some degree or the other. And if you don't believe that, just look at the culture around you. Look at the amount of illness. Look at all the toxicity in our environment. This shit is undeniable, right? There's a lot of things going wrong. If half the population is living on $2 a day, then the entire planet is living on about $2, $2.50 a day, then you have to say, you know what, we're imbalanced and I'm a part of that imbalance. So therefore I need to question everything that's around me and determine, okay, and really ask myself what part of it is relevant and which part of it is not relevant. That's the fundamental question every single human on this planet needs to ask themselves. And I think if they do that, like for me, I've been able to innovate thousands of techniques. I probably have like a good 5,000 to 10,000 techniques that I've been able, unique ones that I've been able to innovate. And it was all the result of me taking that approach, right? How do I question my indoctrination? What's wrong with my indoctrination? And I think if you do that, that's what's going to ultimately lead you down this path of unlimited possibilities, like some of the freedom of movement specialists would probably end up saying. But my perception, here's something to throw out there, man. If, because people talk about movement complexity being really important for cognitive function, I'm going to ask you this question right now, Adam, and I want you to give me a sincere answer. Does Stephen Hawking, you know who Stephen Hawking is, right? Does he seem like he has cognitive disabilities?
Does he seem like he has, or does he have?
Does he have cognitive disabilities? Cognitive, in terms of actually being able to think, like in an abstract fashion.
I would say he's as disabled as his body allows him, but his mind is definitely functioning, but it could function possibly at a higher level. Could he be completely movement? Could he be mobile and work that into what he does?
I disagree. I believe it's his movement impairment that forced him to make adaptations in his mind to visualize more things because he couldn't do things physically anymore. So my perception is, I think he is who he is because of his movement disability. I don't think movement has anything to do with your ability to think intelligently. I think stress adaptation has everything to do. If you're operating from your cerebellum all day long because you're completely stressed out, or you're operating from your limbic system all day, there's no way you can become more intelligent. So you have to ask yourself, is your training making you more adequately prepared for the stressors that you're facing on a day-to-day basis? And if it is, will that allow you to become much more intelligent? And that's the question that I put forth. That's my aim, is that when you open your ribs, when you get your diaphragm, your TVA engaged, are you going to become more tranquil throughout the entire day? Not just tranquil while you're doing yoga, and then you walk out of yoga and your hips are doing this, and your body's going through a slew of stress reactions because you didn't develop structural integrity. I mean, are you changing yourself so 24/7 you're respecting this biorhythm that took millions of years to adapt, right? It took billions of years to adapt this biorhythm. If you can change your stress association, then you're going to change your ability to, your cognition will then follow that. And that's my perception on it. And that's where I see it. It's not about movement complexity, because that's one thing that a lot of people are saying, that if you can move complex, you can think complex. That's not what I'm seeing at all. My perception is, if Stephen Hawking can think fairly complex and he can do string theory in his head, then that tells you that the movement doesn't always reflect what's actually going on in the brain.
I definitely wouldn't say always. I was also trying to fit into the functional pattern idea in my response. But, you know, the same way as if a blind person hears better, et cetera. I mean, our other senses are going to develop, you know, extremely. I mean, I can say my vision has gone a little bit more, but I can tell you when my daughter or wife switched to a different soap. You know, I walked by and smelled my daughter on the couch. I'm 8 feet away, and I walked by and I'm like, that's a boy. And
that's
I'm like, what's that smell? I turn around. I'm like, why do I smell a boy right now? And she's like, are you serious? She's like, I changed my soap in there for this Lush thing. And it, sure enough, I went and smelled it. It's the exact same smell. But I can notice a change of scent like that, a change of sound. But I've been hunting, fishing my whole life. You know, I really keen into those things. But you could definitely argue the fact that they got better because this got worse. And the same with Stephen. The same with Stephen Hawking. We got to play to our strengths.
It's way more complicated than people are giving it credit for. Do you think, let's put it this way, if you put Stephen Hawking in a war zone where bullets are flying everywhere and he has to worry about surviving, how much string theory would he be able to do? Mm-hmm. Nothing, because he's in a fight or flight scenario. His brain can't function in that way because he's like, I'm gonna die. I can't contemplate what's going on in the cosmos because I may die, and so I need to make sure that I don't die. That's, you see what I mean? So it's, everything has a circumstance. So it's like, the key point is can you create, and that's a big thing too, can you create an environment where you're not so stressed out, an environment where you're allowed to chill? But if you're working 16 hours a day, you know, and you're working minimum wage, can you think cognitively at a higher level cognitively if you're having to work 15 hours a day?
Well, no, Maslow would say no, because you're not fulfilling the basic needs at the bottom to be able to even think about self-actualization.
Exactly. So in that regard, we again, everything has a relative context. Everything is contextual. And I think hopefully people within time will be able to grasp this. That's why that's really what I probably gathered. I think Jacques Fresco had a very good soup. He has a very good soup. He's got all the ingredients. He put them together and it enabled me to be like, okay, I understand this guy a lot better. And so it's, I think at the end of the day, that's what people have to realize. Like, who am I getting my soup from? Am I getting my soup from a car salesman who's, you know, who's probably got piles of shit inside of his soup? Or you deal, not that car salesmen are bad people. I've had people who were clients that were car salesmen who were super cool. But it's like, if somebody's trying to sell you that, like if it's the best thing since sliced bread, then that's, they're probably selling you shit. But it comes down to, who are you taking your information from? I think people really do got to start looking at the person, especially nowadays. You got to look at the person and be like, okay, is this person's interest common interest or not? If you look at Bernie Sanders, for instance, it's clear the guy's interest is in all our interests. I think his intentions are based upon what? He's trying to make society better. He's trying to make us be like, oh yeah, why do we have a drug problem? Oh, because people are cognitively fucked up. Maybe we need to put them, rather than putting them in a penitentiary, what should we do? We should have them see a psychologist so they can become more self-aware. Ah, but how many people see those implications? They don't see like, okay, you know, Bernie Sanders is actually, he's actually taken time to figure out the human being. And he makes his assertions after figuring out the human being. He made the assumption that, you know what, human beings are probably conditioned organisms, and that there is no, you know, there are no races really here. There's only conditioning. Which when you think about something like socialism, even if you just hear the words socialism opposed to capitalism, I can't believe people don't actually just, because I'm a big word person. I'm about, okay, what are you trying to identify? I always end up seeing it as if you end up let's say being a capitalist, what does that mean? You capitalize. Somebody's in the third world, so what do? You capitalize on their misfortunes and you make some very cheap products as the capitalist that you are, and you capitalize on poor people. You capitalize on somebody who's, you know, who's like what happened in 2008 when a bunch of people lost their houses, and people capitalized on that. Whereas if it's socialistic, what does it mean? You're thinking about society. You're thinking about that. So I think I find it fascinating that concepts like that are so frowned upon. People like him are so frowned upon, and they have all these negative connotations thrown their way. Negative, I shouldn't use that word. I hate the word negative. But there's bad connotations thrown upon on Bernie Sanders and whatnot, when clearly what's he trying to do? He's trying to make society better. That's clearly it. His vision isn't that of a person that's trying to make billions of dollars, right? Whereas if you look at the other politicians, what are they trying to do, man? They're trying to just politic. They're trying to feed their own self-ego. But I think what humanity needs to start asking themselves is, who is the person that I'm actually following? Does this person, and it's not the person, are the attributes that person has worth following, yes or no? That's the question.
And so you talk about the intention. The intentions are important, you know.
Very important. Very important. But even, let's put it this way. This is another thing. I'm going to throw Jacques Fresco in the thing again. He says, even if politicians are sincere, can they solve problems? Do they know how to make, do they understand how to make topsoil? Right? Do they, which we're having a problem with, right? The topsoil is fucking depleting. We have all these issues. Do they understand, how transportation systems work? Most of the time they don't. So you have to ask, are people even adequate? Are we even adequate to be followed in the first place? There's so many things that I think people just, they kind of swept under the rug. I was hoping that after Zeitgeist came out and after people were exposed to the Venus Project, that people would have been like, oh my God, oh dude, these are the answers. I wish they would have reacted the same way, but
that's the scary part. That's why, like I said, that's why they're on the website, man. The Wake Up documentaries. I challenge anybody to watch all of those documentaries in a row and not break something or start a revolution.
I don't know if you have this on your list, but there's a documentary called The Century of the Self. I strongly recommend that people watch The Century of the Self. Once they watch that documentary, I'm a big documentary buff too, bro. I've seen my fair share as well, obviously. But if you guys could watch The Century of the Self, then I've put that up. Like, anytime that I put up a post that's kind of like anti-establishment on my functional patterns page and whatnot, I'll get some people that go like, oh, you're an asshole, blah, 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 blah. I put The Century of the Self there, and I kind of just went into a description of what it was. I didn't have a single naysayer pop up. You watch a documentary like that, you can't sit there and be like, okay, yeah, you know, society is not funneled down this path. You can't sit there and say, yeah, you know, we're not funneled down this path of complete greed and corruption. Like, literally, it just goes through a through a whole process of discussing how there was people trying to create a consumeristic economy where people were looking at things because they needed them. And they said, you know what? We have to turn humans into a wants-based society, not a needs-based society. So we want to trick them to want things. So then they said, you know what? If you buy this couch, if you buy this car, you are part of the upper class. If you do CrossFit, you're going to be a part of the elite because CrossFit forges elite fitness, right? So he uses that. Or, you know, Edward Bernays, he was actually the nephew of Sigmund Freud. He's the guy that was pushing all this. He said, well, you know what? We need women to start smoking cigarettes. So we're going to get women, because it was illegal to apparently, or it was a cultural taboo. And he said, okay, we need women to start smoking cigarettes. So what are we going to do? We're going to send them down to some of the most famous women that we know into downtown New York. We're going to have them smoking cigarettes, and we're going to call them torches of freedom, right? Freedom, freedom of movement. Some things seem to be getting cycled around like crazy, right? Freedom. So at that point now, people are like, if you don't believe in smoking cigarettes, you don't believe in freedom. So therefore, you're a fucking communist. So they went down this path of convincing society that, you know what, we're going to use these word associations to get people to think erratically and want things. The hippie age comes along, right? You get the hippie community. They're like, we hate this whole idea that, you know what, we're getting structured into this whole consumeristic thing. It's bullshit. You guys are trying to funnel us down this path. We all want to be individuals. That's what we want. And so then what did marketers do? They then said, okay, well, you know what, let's adjust our marketing scheme to that of tricking people that they're going to be individuals and sell them products in relation to their individuality. Boom. They do that. And then so it's like this whole process that we've been living in has been a big marketing scheme. Everything. This whole process of thinking is a marketing scheme. And if we can't think outside of that, we're fucked. There's no way that we're going to really be able to overcome the problems that we're facing on a daily basis. I think human problems are simple. I think if you think about something like nutrition, come on, man. How complicated is nutrition? Stay away from grains, right? Eat your meats, eat your vegetables, eat your make sure you get your water in, and eat some fruits, right? Maybe some occasional nuts. If you operate within that spectrum, you're going to find what's right for you. Okay? Some people will say that veganism works. I don't have a problem with veganism. I think it's cool when people are vegan. I think if you want to I think you're sacrificing somewhat of your own health to become vegan. I think your body may struggle with it just a little bit, just based upon a few things that I've read. But with that said, the fact that you're taking such a humanitarian approach to trying to compensate for the fucking destruction that we're doing on this planet, the fact that you're even making the effort to do that, I think it's commendable. And I'm not going to fucking sit here and hate on a vegan. Also, I've seen vegans that are very healthy, very, very, their vitality is amazing. And they've been following a vegan diet for 10 years and they look great. And I train them and they build their muscle just like any other person does. So I think it comes down to, you know, you just eat your fruits, vegetables, your meats, if you eat meats, right? Like the fish and all that stuff. And you have nuts in there and you follow those basic food guidelines. And then you just find that you figure out your physiology, figure out your life, de-stress. And then within time, your body will tell you what's going to be the macronutrient to micronutrient context that you're going to need. Your body will tell you. But the key point is, like you were saying, you got to question everything. You can't make the assumption that you are who you are because you chose to be who you are. You are who you are because there was a set of variables that condition you to be a particular way, and that your life was predetermined by marketers. Your personality was predetermined by marketers. Your life was predetermined by money-hungry people. There's just no escaping that kind of stuff. And I think if people can come to that that conclusion, we're going to arrive at eliminating a lot of dogmas in our life and arriving at the relative truths that are really going to push us forward as a society.
Man, that's a good way to end on the rampage, brother. Now, you're going to come on the ESPN radio show on Sunday with me, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right, perfect, man. Yeah, so for everybody listening, I got to head down to Naples, actually, in about an hour and a half. And but yeah, I'll be down on ESPN radio with Brett Richard on 93.3 on Sunday. And you're coming with me, bro. It'll be fun to have you on the radio. Let's extend that let's extend that conversation here, man. I gotta get out of here soon and head out. But obviously, you're gonna come on the radio, so you'll come back on here.
Of course, I'll be back for sure, man. Like I said, Adam, I see just even talking to you, you get it. It's nice. Obviously, I have, like I said, there's not a lot of people that are going to get what you say. I think you're from the background because you're from behavioral science and you seem like you're progressive in your outlook to things, which I like. Of course, I'll be back, man. Hell yeah, sure.
Oh, man. Thanks for doing this, man. I can't thank you enough.
Thank you for having me, man.
Yeah, where can people find you real quick? Shout out the websites and everything, man.
Just type in functional patterns on Google. You'll find me. If you actually type in my name or functional patterns, you'll actually see it's a particularly interesting article by a guy named Brett Contreras, and you'll see an isolated perspective looks like when it comes to science, a subjective breakdown of me. But if you type in functional patterns, you'll probably see that. It's worth a good laugh. You can go to functionalpatterns.com or you can go to my Facebook page. Just look up functional patterns. You'll find it everywhere. I got like over 700 videos on YouTube. You can find it. I mean, just look up functional patterns. You look it up anywhere. We're all over the place. So, yeah.
Cool, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for coming on, man. I'll talk at you on Sunday, right?
Yeah, of course, bro, for sure. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Well, we'll see you again, brother. Thanks again.
You too, man. Take care.
Bye. Now, if that's not some competence for you, I don't know what is. I can't thank you enough for doing the show, brother. Shout out to Functional Patterns and all those participating with FP. You know, if it hit on some cognitive dissonance of you, I'd ask you to explore it. You know, the idea is about questioning the norms and questioning everything that we know and trying to tap into those things. I think that's how we advance everything, ourselves, life, including how we take care of ourselves and lifespan, is to question everything we think we know is right, but while using that competence from those that are learning and experimenting, and maybe rather than always pointing out everything that's wrong with everything, is finding a way to question those norms and point out things that can be good with them and test. I like that idea of put it out there, put it to the test, and see what it's like. And we have to learn from those. You know, we have to be careful when we let things like money, capitalism, and bank accounts and growth of corporations start to educate ourselves, our kids, or the public on what's healthy and especially what's happy. You have to be careful of what you're being sold is happiness, of what you're being told will make you happy. And it's about taking an authentic look at yourself and being able to peel back those layers. And, you know, that's what my book, The Cognitive Rampage, A Dose of Authentic Revelation, is about, is using those tools of psychology while giving you a framework to apply your own beliefs and own cultivation in to reveal those powers that you have, and using the tools of psychology to do so while also using the tools of self, your body, your movement, your mind, your nutrition, your exercise, trying to find those ways and helping you reveal it. It's not the end all to be all. I say in the description, this book is not about showing you the way. I'm no maven in telling you that this is the way. But it's about exploring and finding what works for you and revealing that authenticity, in my opinion. But I love that podcast. You will definitely see him on again. I'm headed down to Naples. I'll be in Southwest Florida, Naples area, Marco Island area this weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I'll be on the ESPN radio show with Brett Richard, 93.3, on Sunday at 8 a.m. You can tune in there, talking about the book, speaking at a few places down there. But yeah, it's exciting. The journey of the book being open has begun. So it is the limited edition that we're doing the pre-sale of. So the limited edition is very limited, but it includes the white look, a $250 thank you, a chance to be on the podcast to share your journey to the book and through the book, and a little something personal from myself as well. But those limited editions will be available until they run out. When they run out, we will release then the non-limited edition. But again, you can go to adamlowry.com or cognitiverampage.com and buy that book right now and buy the limited edition before it runs out. But I hope you're taking care of you. Hope you're living your cognitive rampage. Love you. Take care.